Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy! And also a quick reminder, we do have a Patreon where Riley and I do a deep dive into a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket. You have access to that exclusively on Patreon at the $5 tier, which also gives you early Monday releases and all ad-free content. So check it out.
Today's episode trigger warnings are explicit sexual content.
Also, if you're looking for some more smutty podcasts to listen to, tune into Erotically Neurotic Podcast and Bookish Babes After Dark.
Yeah, they're super fun, super sweet. Check them out.
Yeah, go for it.
Do it.
Do it. Also, if you didn't notice,
we
have Shelby back. Woo! We have Shelby.
Thank you.
We missed you.
And I have a review to read. Been getting a bunch lately, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, baby.
This one's from Aloha PT, and it says, "Thanks for the book, Rex. What a great list of titles discussed on the show. It has introduced me to so many new books."
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this week, we're telling Riley all about American Queen by Sierra Simone.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. How many stars did you guys give it on Goodreads?
I gave it a 3.
Okay.
I gave it a 4.5.
I love the contrast.
I was in the middle. I was at like a 4. It was absolutely batshit insane. I think my review was like, this book was more far-fetched than an Ice Planet Barbarian book. Because in what world?
Mm-mm. Zero worlds. Zero.
That's why I rated it so high. It was so entertaining. Like, I was literally laughing out loud. It was bonkers.
Yeah. Riley's not ready for this one. I'm so excited. You're going to be reading some shit.
It was so much fun to read.
On Jenna's notes that she sent me, she put at the top, "Grab some freaking water."
Be ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. I'm going to start today, and we are in the prologue, and it's titled Wedding Day. Her cousin and aunt are fussing over her while she thinks of who awaits her at the end of the aisle. She knew from the moment she met Ash, she was destined to be his and to love him, even if it means robbing her own soul, but she won't be suffering alone. Her grandfather walks her down the aisle, and when she sees Ash, her heartbeat doubles. She sees him struggling with his emotions, and he takes her in for the first time in her dress. But as she walks closer, her eyes catch on him. Dark hair, slender, and ice blue eyes. Embry Moore, Ash's best friend, his best man.
Because of course, I'm not just walking down the aisle to the man I've been in love with since I was 16. I'm walking down the aisle to marry the President of the United States. Wow.
Starting off strong.
Like, imagine having a hot president.
In what world?
I mean, Barack Obama was kind of hot.
I mean, not true. Like this guy. This guy is supposed to be like just drop dead sexy, turns heads everywhere he goes, oozes sex appeal.
Yeah.
I think the hottest president we've had is JFK, and that didn't end well.
No.
And he wasn't even like drop dead sexy. He was just like your average looking like dude, you know?
Yeah.
He still pulled Marilyn Monroe.
That's true.
And Jackie O.
True.
Good for him. Rest in peace.
Sure.
As she continues walking, the guests fade away and it's just the three of them. Ash is stern and powerful, Embry is haunted and pale, and she has bite marks on her thighs.
It's when I'm almost to the front that I see that the small white square in Ash's tuxedo pocket isn't a silk handkerchief. It's undeniably the familiar lace of my panties. No one who hasn't seen my panties before would know, but he's so blatantly displaying them, like a trophy. The last time I saw them, they were clutched in Embry's strong fist.
And Embry's not her husband.
Who the heck is Embry?
Ash is her soon-to-be husband.
Oh, that's right. Is it like a thruple?
We'll see.
I don't know.
No spoilers.
Her grandfather gives her away at the altar and she's married. We jump back 18 years ago and she was cursed by a wizard at 7 years old.
What?
I had to include that because when I read it, I'm like, excuse me?
Wait, what is this?
Yeah, I don't understand the whole wizard
thing. Where did the wizard come from?
There's a wizard.
Okay.
She's fucking the president and there's a wizard.
She was cursed.
She would go to charity events with her grandpa Leo at 7 years old. She paid special attention to everyone and everything, and by the end of the night, her grandpa would ask her questions about other guests, details about them, etc. So she was kind of like his little like spy, but she was seven, so she didn't really care. At one particular event, something was different when her grandpa called her over to meet this tall, mid-20s man who reminded her of an evil wizard from a fairy tale. Her grandpa introduced her to Mr. Merlin Reese.
Yeah, good thing he doesn't have a wizard-ass name.
Her grandpa tells her that he's moving here from England to consult the party. We learn that her grandpa he's like a senator or something, right?
Yeah, and he was the vice president of the United States at one point.
Okay.
She feels fear from Merlin and tries not to show it as her grandpa and him talk politics, and then her grandfather's pulled away and she's alone. He stares at her with distaste and kneels in front of her and grabs her chin. He tells her that she is not ambitious, but also careless, not cold, but sometimes distant, passionate, intelligent, and dreamy, but she's also easily hurt. And she's like 7 years old, like,
okay, sir.
And he simply tells her that it can't be you, sorry. He tells her to keep her kisses to herself when the time comes, and then Hearing walks away.
Okay, fucking creep.
Yeah, this guy's weird as hell.
She's like, Grandpa, who the fuck was that?
Before the end of the night, when they're all saying their goodbyes, Merlin's parting words to her are, she's sorry to hear about her parents, and despite everything, she's a sweet girl who deserves happiness. And she's like sobbing in the car on the way home, like, call my parents, Grandpa, what's going on? He does call them on their way home, and they're safe. They answer the phone. But when she wakes up in the morning, her grandpa's standing in her doorway, phone dangling from his hands, and the look of shock on his face, her parents died. So like, they were perfectly fine going to sleep, and then she just wakes up and her whole world is like different.
And Merlin predicted
it. Would have been my life goal to find that man and kill him.
Be like, why'd you do this to me?
This was on you, old man.
He's only 20.
Fuck him.
We are now 11 years ago. She's lived with her grandpa Leo since the night her parents died. He was busy with the party, but took her in and they adapted as best as they could. She still couldn't help but think of how Merlin must see the future and specifically hers, and she vowed to never kiss anyone as long as she lived. At 14, her grandfather told her she could go overseas to boarding school with her cousin, and that's how she ends up at Cadbury Academy for Girls in England. She falls in love with the school and the curriculum and everything. I want to go there. It's a sprawling complex made of stone, stained glass, towers, and multiple libraries.
Ooh.
I forgot to mention, her name is Greer.
It's Greer?
Her name is Greer.
Yeah, G-R-E-E-R. I didn't say Greer that one time. Her and her cousin seek out to go to parties, but Greer spends most of her free time in the library. She describes her cousin Abilene as tall and willowy, but herself short and lagging things the boys like to see. She has a slight cleft in her chin and a beauty mark on her cheek that she hates. She has gray eyes and long, thick, blonde hair. Her cousin is definitely the monarch of their little group, and Greer is content to be like her sidekick forever. Her cousin tells her one day that she'll become the little slut of Cadbury just like her, and she can't wait to see how wild she gets. And I was like, that's weird.
That's a weird thing to say to your cousin.
You're gonna be a slut like me.
14 years old. But little does Abby know, Greer wakes up from dreams that are kinky. She just can't kiss anyone or act on it.
So she just has filthy little thoughts in her head.
At 14.
Little horn dog. I don't think I was thinking that at 14. But I don't know. Maybe I was.
Just kinky ass shit.
We're now in the present. She's a teacher in Georgetown, and she teaches Arthurian lit. And it's like a medieval English class at Oxford.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And she finds it really weird to be back in the United States full time, because this whole time she's been over in England. She tries to remind herself that she has everything she needs, but she can't help but feeling like she's missing something. Probably sex and kissing people at, I think she's 21 right now.
Yeah, what a sad, sad life. I mean, I take that back. That's not a sad life. I shouldn't say that, but where's the fun?
But she wants it. Yeah. She wants it.
Put your puss out. Yeah, put your puss out in the world.
We do learn, though, that she's ignored Merlin's warnings twice and nothing has happened.
Yeah, because he's a bitch.
As she's lost in grading papers, she realizes someone is behind her, a man with muscular chest, ice blue eyes, and day-old stubble with a straight nose and full lips. She knows him as Mr. Embry Moore, Vice President Embry Moore.
Oh, what?
Just the vice president walks into your classroom and is like, hey.
I'm just a normal person.
This book is really funny if you just picture, like, Joe Biden and Kamala.
She asks how she can help him, and he wants to know if she's free for dinner tonight. And she's like, it's literally midnight right now. Like, why are you here? She gets angry for a moment, thinking about how he had once forgot about her 5 years ago. But then he surprises her and asks why she keeps hiding in this place. She tries to say that she's not hiding. She's teaching and she's happy. He tells her that she's always been an awful liar and to just go to dinner with him. She says it's been 5 years and she doesn't want the media to get a hold of them out together, but he says that they won't. She finally agrees and they go to a small Italian restaurant couple blocks down from campus. He asks how she's doing, all the small talk that you can think of, and all she can think about is how it felt to run her fingers over his shirt and her history intertwined with him and someone else.
Oh.
So he's trying to make small talk and she's like,
I want
to
fuck you.
He finally tells her why he's there after all these years, and President Colchester wants to meet with her. She's like, why? It's been 5 years. I don't need to meet with him. She looks to her hand where there is a small scar that comes with many memories. He grabs her hand and kisses it delicately. She asks why the president didn't come himself, and he lets her know that he's too closely watched, especially Jenny's funeral only being a year ago. And that's the president's late wife. She says, fine, she'll meet him. 10 years ago, we're back in the past. It's her 16th birthday.
This part is so fucking problematic.
This is why I was like, no.
3 stars.
Oh, no. So it's her 16th birthday party?
Uh-huh. 10 years ago. So she's technically 26. She's not 21. I said 21.
Okay.
It's her 16th birthday party, and her and Abby are getting ready to go to an adult party with their grandpa Leo. They're only getting to go with the promise of the fact that Greer will keep Abby on her best behavior so they don't embarrass her grandpa. She's in a beautiful dress from her grandpa and still can't help but feel like she's in Abby's shadow because Abby looks very mature and beautiful. For some reason, though, Abby refuses to speak to her on the way to the party, and she's like, are you mad at me or something? She's like, no, just stay away from me tonight. And Greer's like, what?
She's like, no, I'm not mad at you, but please don't fucking talk to me.
Don't even breathe in my direction. Get away.
But we're cool.
That's how I am when Andrew asks me if I'm mad. I'm like, no, not at all. Get the fuck away from me, though.
She's upset because Abby is her best and only friend, and she's tired of everything being all about her. And the only reason Abby's getting to go is because Greer told her grandpa that she'll babysit her. When they get to the party, Abby goes her own way, and their grandpa tells her to just let her go. He wants to introduce Greer to some friends, and she's like, okay, cool, I'm about to spy for you. She's still okay spying this whole time. Even at 16, she's like, I'll spy for you.
I feel like it'd be fun. This is my duty.
After an hour, she breaks away, and guess who she runs into? Merlin Reese. He remembers her from all those years ago, and when he's distracted, she, like, runs away to find Abby. She finds Abby in the library with a man far older than her kissing her neck. She sends the man away and tries to hash out whatever issues Abby has with her, but it goes nowhere, and Abby, like, smashes her champagne glass and leaves the room.
Oh my god.
But she's not mad.
Not mad at all.
Greer tries to pick up the glass when an unfamiliar voice tells her that she's going to cut herself if she isn't careful. The voice is American, though, and she's like, oh, it's different because she's used to English people being overseas. He's in his mid-20s with broad shoulders, narrow hips, a chiseled jaw with full mouth and emerald green eyes. He's also in, like, full military regalia, and the nameplate on his chest reads Colchester. He offers to help her, and she's speechless and thinks that he's the most handsome man she's ever met, which at 16, I get that part.
Yeah.
Being like, oh my gosh, yeah. She's so hot. But what's about to come next?
Inappropriate.
Oh, wow.
As he helps clean up the glass, he tells Greer that the other girl is clearly jealous, which explains the temper tantrum. And she's like, I don't understand why my cousin would be jealous. I'm boring and nothing compared to her. He asks for her hand and she extends it with the small pile of glass she collected. He takes the glass from her and tells her that she should have been more careful. Her finger is cut and bleeding and she didn't notice. She looks at him clearly for the first time and uses her spying skills that she reserves for partygoers to take in all his details. He is clearly very tired. And she lets him know that meditating helps insomnia. And he's like, how did you know that I don't sleep? She says she could help him sleep if she would. And the air gets like tense.
What the fuck? You're 16.
He can't believe that just a small interaction from a 16-year-old girl could tell her so much about him. He pulls all the glass out of her hand, takes the splinter out.
Another teardrop of blood oozed out. And without a word, he bent his head over my hand and drew the pad of my finger into his mouth, sucking the blood off my skin. I could feel every flicker of his tongue, every soft scrape of his teeth, and every thrum of my pulse and every beat of my heart cried out for more, for something, for I didn't know what, but parts of me knew. My skin erupted in goosebumps, and I wanted to press my thighs together to soothe an ache that seemed everywhere and nowhere all at once.
To be fair, at this point, he does not know she's 16.
True.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
To be fair.
Tells her to stand up, and that's the last time she's allowed to hurt herself. His voice is full of discipline, and she says yes, and then he calls her a good girl, and I was like, what?
Yeah, I would have been like, ugh.
Yeah, she's all giddy, though, because she's like, attention? Okay, yeah, I like attention. And he pulls her flush against his body and tells her to stand still and not move. He presses his lips to her neck, and then he asks if she likes that, and she said that she does. She also likes him being demanding and moving her body, and, like, she voices that she wants him to take control, and he's like, okay. He whispers that she's very young, and she knows that she should lie about her age, but she's like, I don't lie. That's not my personality. I'm not 18.
He swore, and then he tilted my face back up to his, and his mouth came down over mine anyway.
Yeah.
He said, age doesn't matter, baby.
He basically was like, are you 18? She's like, no. And he's like, I don't care. Who does that? Literally, who does that?
Why would you even ask?
I know. He's like, I want to make sure you are the age of consent. You aren't? Let's still do it.
He continues to kiss her, and she finally kisses him back with tongue. He wants to know where she came from and why she's not 18 yet. And she's like, how old are you? He's like, 26.
Why aren't you 18 yet? Because I was born 2 years later. What do you mean?
He lets her go and she begs him to continue. She'll literally do anything for him. And he's like, no, this is dangerous.
You can catch a charge.
The door opens and Merlin steps in, and she is finally introduced to Colchester as the ex-vice president's granddaughter. And Colchester's like, oh.
Hey.
But before he leaves, she gets his full name, Captain Maxon Ashley Colchester, but he tells her that she can call him Ash. It's still 10 years ago time period. She's writing him an email and sending him attachments about meditation for insomnia. She continues these emails for a long time, like telling him everything about her life, like her days at school, everything like that, troubles that she has, but she gets no emails back. So he stays in his lane.
Girl.
We get to one specific email from her 17th birthday, and she's drinking. She admits that she wants to have one bad night, but not exactly the same way that her cousin Abby does.
She writes to him for fully a year, and he never responds. And she's just like, hey, Ash. Today, I had a corn dog for lunch, and then I went to bed, and just keep sending them for a year.
She's like, I wrote to you every day for a year. I don't want boring, common ways of being bad. I want ways that rattle me to my bones, that send me to my knees in repentance. I want to be the kind of bad that leaves me wrung out with bite marks blooming purple on my body. I want to go to the brink of not knowing myself. I want someone to take me there and hold me by the neck and make me stare at an entire reckless realm of possibility.
You are 17, man.
You don't even know what you're saying.
Her emails are wild to him.
She's just like, do you want to hear about my high school day? As he's like a full-grown adult now.
Yeah.
She also admits in the email that she touches herself when she writes her emails to him.
This girl's unhinged.
I love it. I love it so much.
I want to feel like my veins are being sliced open by the sheer desire of someone powerful. I want to be handled and cherished and used and worshipped. I mean, honestly, you're not responding to her at all. And she sends you this email and he's like, I want to be sliced open by the sheer desire of someone powerful. And he's like, what the fuck? I'm so wet right now. I wish it were your fingers inside me, your thumb on my clit. You'd be so good at that. I can't stop thinking about your hands, how big and strong they are. I bet your eyes would burn green as you rubbed me. I bet you would lick your lips at the thought of tasting me, of being the first man to ever taste me. I think about what it would have been like if you'd fucked me that night, right there against the wall maybe, or on the large desk in the corner.
That's a crime.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would have gone to jail, girl. Yeah. Wow. I mean, she's got away with words. Poetic.
She ends her email saying she doesn't know if he'll ever read it.
They're just all going to his spam.
We're in present day now. She's walking into her church to meet with Ash. He's kneeling at the front with his head bowed in prayer. She stops next to him and does the same, but she studies him. He's still very sexy, and then he speaks and her body ignites in flames. He thanks her for meeting him and tells her that he couldn't wait another moment since seeing her last Sunday, because he also went to church last Sunday and that's where they saw each other. He's under the presumption that Embry and Greer don't know each other, so she's kind of confused by this, but he helps her to her feet and guides her to the door to the church gardens. She tells him that she doesn't understand why he wants to meet, since they've only seen each other twice. She admits that even though he hasn't talked to her minus those two times throughout 10 years, he hasn't stopped thinking about her. He tells her all the words that men use about women: enchanted, charmed, addicted. They don't begin to cover what I felt for you in your handful of shattered glass. You were all I thought about, built these fantasies in my mind where I would come home after the war and find you at whatever university you're at. So he's been thinking about her this whole time.
He says, I'd kiss you like you were 16 again.
Ew. He even went as far as contacting her grandfather to see how she was doing throughout her schooling and everything about her life. So he would not respond to her emails, but he would email Leo, be like, so,
how's your hot granddaughter? Just wondering.
She feels dizzy with excitement and lust because he finally, like, just admitted that he's wanted her as long as she's wanted him. But she doesn't say anything yet, and he starts to think that maybe the night that he kissed her at 16 didn't mean anything. But she stops and says, it meant everything. I'm just scared to get hurt.
Check your email.
He tells her he would do anything to become hers, and she says that he already is, and they begin kissing right there in church. They're interrupted before it can go farther by a Secret Service agent telling him that it's time to go. He doesn't want to leave her, but he has an important meeting, and he asks if he can send a car to her house, and she'll get in it. And she's like, I really don't want to be a mistress in a dirty little secret, but obviously, yes, I'm going to get in the car. She's ready by the time the car pulls up, and she thinks that, what if she's not the only young, hot blonde that gets into it? His vehicles. She tries not to get upset about it, but she's having a difficult time until she meets Ash's personal aide, and he assures her that they never get to do anything like this for the present. This is so much fun, setting up a secret meeting because he doesn't fuck anyone. Which I was like, personal assistant, like, chill out.
That's a weird thing to say.
He's a wingman for sure.
Yeah.
He takes her to Ash's room, and she recognizes immediately that even though it's decorated differently, this is the same room that her grandpa Leo had been in, which is also weird. I want to kiss this boy in my grandpa's old room.
No, I'm good on that.
Just thinking about your grandpa as you're making out with someone.
His assistant, Ryan, again, is a little too forward and says that they're really, really all excited that he has a date with her and are hoping he gets laid because he needs it. And she's like, am I the first since Jenny? And he's like, yes, we cannot wait for him to get some pussy, pretty much.
This man needs to get fucked.
She waits about an hour, and then Ash finally arrives. He tells her to have a seat on the desk and face the chair. He grabs a wooden box and sits in the chair in front of her. He hesitates to tell her something because he thinks it's going to be too direct, but she's like, just say what you need to say. He tells her before they continue, she should probably make a safe word. And she's like, I'm not going to make a safe word because you can literally do whatever you want to me. I've wanted you since I was 16 years old. He slips her heels off her feet and places her legs on the arm of the chair, spreading her open. He tells her to pull her skirt back, and she admits that she's only had sex one time, and he groans at this and demands to pull her panties aside so he can see her.
It feels good. It feels like another Greer. A Greer I put to sleep and buried in the backyard of my mind is slowly waking up. The Greer who wrote those emails to Ash. The Greer who bit Embry's shoulder and trailed scratches down his back as he moved between her bloody thighs. She's loving waking up to this. She wants to preen like a cat as Ash draws in a long breath once he sees the already wet flesh of her pussy. His hands slide up the outside of my calves, the rough skin tickling my knees and then my inner thighs as he braces his hands there and pushes me wider apart. I feel myself opening, feel his eyes on the part of me only one other man has seen. One other man who happens to be his best friend and the vice president of the United States. Wait, so she fucked Embry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When'd she do that?
We'll find out.
Oh, she's a little snake.
He tells her that while they're together, she can call him sir, and her only two responsibilities are surrendering to him and saying his name out loud when she wants to stop. He asks her to open the box, and it's a stack of papers, and he says, read them all. They're all of her emails printed out over the years that she never got a response to.
Oh, my goodness. I'd have been like, why are you showing me these?
You were 17, Greer. Was I supposed to write back and tell you that, yes, I did fuck my fist every night thinking of you? That every time I read your emails, I had to jack off? That even the mere sight of your name on my computer screen got me hard? I hated myself enough for having those feelings for a girl that age. I couldn't make it worse by reaching out to you. He gives me a rueful smile. But I also couldn't bring myself to tell you to stop, to block your emails. God, I wanted you so much, and it was the only way I could have even this little piece of you. So I kept reading, kept coming to the fantasies of you fingering yourself at your desk as you wrote to me.
I'm just thinking about your email saying, I had a corn dog for lunch today.
He's like, yeah, you want this corn dog.
Ew. He admits that he has them memorized and hopes that she still means every word after all these years. And she says that she does. So he runs his hands up her thighs. He pushes her legs wider and finally touches her. He spreads her open as he plays with her and then slaps her hard on the thigh. And she's very into this. As he teases her, he tells her that he wants to know how she fucked herself while writing those emails. And she's like instantly nervous. I'm like, you wrote them. Just repeat it.
Yeah.
She instantly gets nervous, but he grabs her hand and says he'll help her get started.
I do as he says, letting my eyes fall shut as he moves my hand so that my fingers graze the wet folds and then move up higher to my swollen clit. The moment my fingers touch it, I nearly jolt off the table. I'm starved for this, needy, because even though I get myself off nearly every night, having Ash here changes it fundamentally.
Yeah, you're gonna get a dick in ya.
It's her dream come true. She continues to touch herself until her body's begging for more and she wants to come. He says that she can, but he wants to know when it happens. And she says now as he plunges two fingers inside of her, making her orgasm more intense. His fingers stop and he asks if she feels good and she says yes. And then he like does like some weird twisting finger motion inside of her and was like, that's not the answer I'm looking for. And he tells her that she needs to thank him when he makes her feel good. And she says, yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
It's like a military like,
thank you, Mr. President. Do not forget this man is the president of the United States.
Oh, wow. Crazy.
He pulls his fingers out and wipes them on her dress and then grabs her hair and pulls her off the desk to her knees. He pulls his belt buckle off and she catches sight of his dick.
I don't know why this is funny. Male. Well, yeah, it's a dick. Male and hard and thick and so much more beautiful than I ever could have imagined. All smooth ridges and a wide flared tip. Every part of him flushed a dusky red. It's hard for me. It's hard for me. Throbbing for me. And like a greedy girl, I reach for it with both hands. Greedy girl.
She says it's mine, mine, mine.
As she reaches to touch it, he tells her she has to do it with her mouth. She's never done this before, but she wants to try for him. As she uses her mouth, she learns what he likes based off the noises that he's making. She gets more confident, and then he starts to fuck her mouth, and she does a great job adapting until he starts going harder. She tries to adjust as best as she can, and he praises her for how good she's taking it. But he tells her that he needs more and removes his dick and shoves it into her mouth super hard.
It's invasive and brutal and fucking intoxicating. I'm the one being used, but in the dirty, airless heat of it all, he's the one weakened and at the mercy of my mouth. He's the one unraveling, thrusting, and swearing and sweating. The one who's more beast than human, and all because of something I'm doing. I get a quick break for air, and then I'm back down. And I'm...
It's like she's going swimming. She's like...
and I feel both of his hands on my head, pushing me down as far as I'll go, to the point where my nose is buried against the clean, shortly trimmed hair at the base of his cock.
Damn.
This is her first blowjob. Yeah. She's just getting face fucked.
She is getting face fucked 100%.
He finally comes and he tells her to clean him off. She does as she's told and then he praises her again. He makes her stay on her knees with her hands behind her back while he goes to get a washcloth to clean her face. He takes her hair out of its bun and admits that her hair is the first thing that he noticed about her. It was the highlight of all his fantasies, imagining it wrapped around his fist as he fucked her from behind. He kisses her hair and then grabs a brush and starts just brushing her hair.
Gentlemen.
But this really weirded me out.
Did it?
Because it's like a reoccurring theme for him to just like go up to her and just like start like brushing and like braiding her hair, like sniffing it. And
because
he's like obsessed with her hair.
Like weirdly obsessed with her hair. Have you guys seen Charlie's Angels?
Yeah.
The guy that cuts like the piece of hair and he's like,
yes. I was going to say it's a little serial killer-y.
She almost cries at how gentle he's being. And he admits that when he was in the war, his main fantasy would be of him brushing her hair. Whether she was 16, 17, older, or pregnant at his feet with his ring on her finger. That's all he wanted to do was brush her hair. He wants her to spend the night and sleep in bed with him. And she says that they can do more than sleep, but he's like, no, we're good. We're just going to sleep tonight. He undresses her and says when they had sex, it will be when he could take his time with her. She says, okay. And then they go to bed and cuddle and fall asleep. We're 5 years ago. She's 28 years old, visiting home. She goes to lunch with her grandpa Leo and some of his friends while Abby goes to take a nap at the hotel. At lunch, she listens politely to everyone talk until she hears someone mention Merlin's name. She immediately sees him approaching with a familiar face, Maxon Coltesser. Mm. So this will be her second time seeing him.
Okay.
Her grandfather reintroduces them and he says that he remembers her and it's good to see her again. But he looks like he's kind of shocked to see her there. The lunch goes normally as possible and she, even though she's like internally freaking the fuck out, she asks if she can excuse herself to go to the museum and her grandpa's like, yeah, we'll catch up later. As she's walking around the museum and finally calming her inner dialogue of being like, holy fucking shit, that's him, like, this is crazy. His voice comes up behind her. They talk about the history of a particular statue, and she bites her lip when he's talking to her, and he grabs her hair and yanks her head back. He presses his erection against her, but she, like, he doesn't say anything at all.
Oh my god.
They're in a museum with other people.
In front of the artwork?
Not the artwork. All she says is, yes, please, and he groans, but drops her hair and apologizes for being inappropriate, and he takes a step back. Just as she's about to say something, her grandpa Leo walks up and says that he needs to steal his granddaughter, but maybe they can talk again at Merlin's birthday party later.
Okay, so we're still 5 years ago. Her cousin Abby is freaking out about going to a party that Maxon will be at too, and his hot friend Embry. So this is Merlin's birthday party. She's got this full plan where she'll go after Maxon, and Greer will go after Embry, and they'll all fall in love and live happily ever after. She has no idea the situation that occurred between Greer and Ash / Maxon. When they get there, Greer goes to get them drinks and she runs into Merlin, who is like, I'm not gonna tell you to leave, but I strongly suggest that you do.
I'd be like, Merlin, fuck off. What is your problem?
Yeah. Well, she's like, why do you hate me? And he says he doesn't, that he doesn't want to see her or anyone he cares about getting hurt, and brings up the kiss she shared last night with Maxon. He says that Maxon is destined for great things, and whatever is going on between them is over now. And then she spots Ash and is immediately left breathless. But she sees him kissing a beautiful brunette woman on his arm.
Who?
She's filled with white-hot rage, thinking about how he just recently had his hard dick pressed against her, and now him saying they can't do this makes so much more sense. Merlin tells her that Maxon proposed to this woman the previous day, and this is what he wanted to prevent her from seeing. So he proposed to some woman and then pressed his weenie up against Greer.
What a fuck.
Merlin tells her she's a good person. She needs to keep her kisses to herself for a while longer, and she'll get her happily ever after. Her eyes fill with tears and she tries to run out of the party but runs straight into Ash. He grabs her arm and tries to talk to her, but she just says she's gotta leave. She jerks out of his hold and bumps into Jenny, which is his fiance, who's coming back from the bar, and Jenny accidentally spills gin all over Greer's dress. Jenny tells her she's so sorry and grabs napkins to clean her up, and as Greer looks at her, she can see that Jenny is a kind person and knows that even though she's in pain, it doesn't have to be somebody's fault. She thanks Jenny and rushes to the elevator as Ash calls her name and starts to walk toward her. She gets in as soon as the doors open and they close before he can reach her. Which, like, how is Jenny not like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, running after this random girl. As Greer reaches the lobby, her phone is blowing up with texts from Abby telling her that she saw Greer leave and that Maxon is here with some woman, and tells her to come back to the party so they can figure out how to get him away from her. So Abby's like, get back here. My man is with some other bitch and we're gonna get him away from her and I'm gonna fuck him and we're gonna fall in love.
Abby's never even talked to him before.
Greer is crying too hard to reply and runs right into someone. She looks up at who it is, and it's possibly the most handsome man she's ever seen. And she says that he's, like, even more handsome than Ash.
Oh, okay, Embry.
Yeah, and it's Embry.
He's my favorite, just saying.
Yeah, I'm team Embry, too.
I feel like the best friend's always the favorite.
Embry's just not a pedo, so we love that.
He's not, and that is, like, an extra 10 points for Embry. He asks her if she's okay and says that he feels constitutionally unable to leave her alone in her state as she tries to walk out the door, because she's, like, hysterically, like, snot running down her face, crying. She tells him it's none of his business, and he says, what's anyone's business, really? Which gets them somehow on the topic of John Steinbeck and how he ended one of his books with this adult breastfeeding scene.
Oh.
So it's a weird conversation. And Embry's like, who hasn't breastfed a little bit to understand the dehumanizing depths of poverty and displacement? And Greer is like, me, I have never done that. Embry says, would you like to get a few drinks tonight and change that?
And the whole thing was so ridiculous that I giggled. I'm not letting you breastfeed from me, I said, wondering how this conversation got so strange and funny, and also wondering when I'd stopped crying, because I realized I had. Get your mind out of the gutter, he said with a pitying shake of his head. I obviously meant that you would breastfeed from me. I giggled again. I didn't peg you for the kinky type. You aren't pegging me at all. That's our current problem. And it was a joke, and he said it with the crooked dimpled grin. But suddenly, my mind was filled with the image of Embry underneath me, moaning and panting, and heat filled my cheeks. Oh, he's a funny guy, huh?
Yeah.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah, I love them.
He tells her his real kink is taking gorgeous strangers out for hot dogs and maybe a ride on the Ferris wheel at the pier. Greer says the porn for that genre must be very boring, and he says, it is, but do you want to go? She says, he doesn't even know her name, but he tells her that he knows she's gorgeous and that she knows 20th century American literature and that he wants to see her smile instead of crying. She says her name is Greer, and he says, sweet Greer, I don't know what happened to you tonight, but I don't want it to have the final say in tonight. So she agrees to go with him. 2 hours later, they're walking on the pier holding hands, and Greer is smitten.
Honestly, I would be too. It would have worked
on me. He sounds like a fucking charmer.
They go on the Ferris wheel together, and she gives him a vague rundown on why she was crying at the party tonight. He gets on his knees in front of her on the Ferris wheel, which is terrifying. I hate when anybody moves yes. at all on a Ferris wheel and it rocks, but he gets on his knees.
I would have been screaming.
She runs her hands through his hair, and he tells her how there's someone out there for him too that doesn't return his feelings, and it makes him feel like he's doomed to be miserable forever. He kisses the inside of her wrists, and she tells him she doesn't want to be doomed and miserable tonight, and Embry asks if he can do that for her. They make out for the rest of the Ferris wheel ride and get into a cab, unable to keep their hands off of each other, and then they get to his hotel. They make out the entire way up, and he yanks the door open and drags her inside and carries her right to the bed. They strip each other clumsily, and they're still making out frantically as they grind on each other until they're both left in just their undies. He tells her he could come like this, and she thinks to herself that she totally could too.
And she's a virgin, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Go off, girl. Too impatient to pull my dress off properly, Embry tugged on the straps and yanked it down so that it was bunched around my middle. Your tits, he murmured. I want to see them. Your tits out now. I managed to squirm out of my bra, and then he was on my breast with his mouth and his rough fingers, making me whimper, and suddenly our breastfeeding conversation from earlier didn't seem so ridiculous. In a weird way, it was almost like he was nursing from me in a metaphorical, vampiric sense. He was seeking succor from my body, seeking nourishment and release in life, and I wanted to offer it to him. I don't think he was seeking all that. He was just... getting hot and heavy.
On some titties.
He said, mama.
Milkies, uppies. She pushes his head down between her legs and he rips off her panties.
A kiss on my mound, a kiss to each inner thigh, and then his mouth was there, there, and my hips jerked involuntarily at the sensation. It was too much, even though he'd just started, but I'd never felt this before. Never felt what a silky wet mouth could do to silky wet flesh. Oh my god, stop. Never known how the gentle nip of teeth would feel on my clit, the sucking of lips on the same. Never guessed what having my hole circled and then fucked with the strong tongue would be like. If I had known, Jesus, if I had known, I would have never turned down those myriad offers of dates and drinks at Oxford. You taste so good, Embry growled from between my legs. You gonna come for me now? Gonna make me taste you as you do it? You gonna come for me now? I'm sorry, but silky wet mouth could do to silky wet flesh? No, thank you.
Yucky.
I'm intrigued.
Fair enough.
She looks down at him, feeling powerful, seeing this handsome man humping the bed just from tasting her.
His cock was so hard that the dark tip had pushed its way out of the waistband of his boxers, standing up almost past his navel, the dim city light catching the bead of moisture at his slit. It said, hello.
Yeah, I think she says that both of their dicks are 8 inches long.
8 inches. Yeah.
That's a dick.
It's going up past his belly button.
Oh, good God.
Yeah, and she got face fucked earlier by 8 inches.
And he, like, shoved that in her mouth.
Yeah, she said her nose was up against his pelvis.
Good for her.
She's a trooper.
If there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, that's true. He hurries to the bathroom to go grab a condom, and she considers telling him that she's a virgin, but decides against it because she knows she wants this, and that fucking Ash's best friend will make her feel good.
Yeah.
It's a little toxic, but okay.
I had never rolled on a condom before, but Embry helped me, holding his dick steady as I slowly worked the latex down his length. He had a beautiful cock, 8 thick inches. How do you know that? You measure it?
She got it out of her measuring
tape. She just broke it out and said, let me measure this bad boy.
She has a travel one in her pocket.
Yeah.
She says, hold still, please.
She says, I keep a list of the biggest dicks I've ever fucked.
This is the only one on the list.
Straight and proud, with a purple dark tip and close cropped curls at his base. Even the heavy sack underneath his dick was beautiful. Looking so full and ready for release. And I laid back on the bed and beckoned for him to join me. Ready for him to spill himself inside me. Ready for him to relieve the ache there. He followed me, his body still trembling with the effort of holding back, and settled on top of me. Open up, he demanded through clenched teeth. Open yourself for me. He said, open up! I'm gonna fuck ya!
As he starts to push into her, she's crying out with pain, and he's telling her how tight she is, and then she blurts out that she's a virgin, and he just looks at her for a second, and she says she still wants this, and he thrusts all the way in one go.
He said, oh, you're a virgin?
Savage.
It's gonna hurt.
He says, hymen, gone.
He starts to fuck her hard and fast as her screams turn to screams of pain to screams of pleasure.
You're with me, he grunted in my ear as he continued to force his way in and out of my virgin cunt. Wow, he's aggressive. You're not with him. You're giving this to me. His words made me moan. They were possessive and dark and rude and fetishizing, and I didn't care. It turned me on to hear and see him so aroused by breaking my hymen, and it piled more fuel onto my jealous, bleeding heart. I was giving this to someone else. Ash would never have it, and I let myself imagine that made me satisfied, that it covered up the pain I felt tonight at seeing him with Jenny. Embry rose up on his knees, keeping his tip lodged in me, and his fingers dug hard into my hips as he swept his gaze over the place where we joined. I looked too, and it gave me some kind of strange delight to see the blood wet and dark on my thighs, smeared across his thighs and hips, glistening in streaks on the condom. Yeah, Embry said to himself, that's it, all mine.
Sir.
And that's when the deep, deep itch finally flared into true pleasure. The drag of his large helmet against my sensitive front wall. Helmet?
Yeah.
Is she calling the tip of his penis a helmet?
Uh-huh.
She is. Appalled. The friction at my clit from the base of his cock, the biological urge to be stretched and filled, all of it winding my body like a clock, whirring tighter and tighter. You're gonna come for me, aren't you? Embry said in my ear. You're gonna come on my dick, and when you do, when you're shuddering underneath me with blood on your thighs, it's my name, you say. Got it? Yes, sir.
Sir, yes, sir.
Oh my god.
She comes, chanting his name, and he buries himself deep inside of her, kissing her frantically as he finishes, too.
I went on and on for both of us, his release so strong, I could feel the throb of his dick as he filled the condom with his orgasm, and I had a surreal moment of regret, wishing that there hadn't been a condom, wishing that it would have been bare, hard flesh buried deep into the soft, that there would have been the uncivilized mingling of my virgin blood with his seed. Are you okay?
No, she's not. No,
she is not okay. He pulls out of her and stands up to throw the condom away, and she's scared he's about to call her an Uber, but he picks her up and carries her to the bathroom and starts her a shower. They get in together, and he says he's sorry and asks if she's okay, and she says she doesn't know, which, like, that's a little alarming.
I'd have been like, okay.
He cleans the blood off of her legs and tells her she deserved more from her first time than having him, and she tells him she loved it. She loved how rough he was, and he tells her she's a dangerous girl and asks what she needs from him right now. She says she just wants to spend the rest of the night with him, and he tells her he'd love to spend tonight and this week and any time she'll allow, and that he's not stupid enough to let her go. They spend the rest of the night fucking, and she wakes up the next morning and leaves him a note telling him that she can't wait to see him again, but she doesn't. He doesn't call or write or contact her in any way the entire week. She spends the rest of her time in the States moping and heads back to London 8 weeks later, completely heartbroken, and she swears off men entirely, and it's radio silence from both men.
I mean,
she got ghosted.
Yeah.
He ghosted her.
And he's the one that was like, I want to see you every day. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and then he just never calls her.
He pumped and dumped.
We're back in the present day. She wakes up in bed with Ash, and when he opens his eyes, she says, "Good morning, Mr. President."
Ew.
He tells her he hasn't slept for a full night in God knows how long, and she tells him maybe she's just his lucky sleep charm, and he's like, "Then I have to keep you." They're about to get freaky when Belvedere comes in, and Belvedere's the aide, and he's telling Ash that he's called every phone he owns, and Ash needs to get his ass to work, because he's, like, literally running a country.
Yeah, he's Mr. President.
He's like, "Can you not get your dick wet? Can you just please run the country?
Please, just for a second.
The people need you."
He says he'll be down in 25 minutes and orders Greer to get in the shower now. She gets in and he strips and she starts ogling his dick and he says, "Hey, my eyes are up here." She's never seen him fully naked before and she says she could stare at him forever. And he says, "They don't have forever. They have 10 minutes and those are all for him."
Gross.
"Turn around," he orders, hands on the wall, legs spread. "This is the first time I get to see you naked, too. Don't forget. And I'm not going to miss a thing." He's like, "I'm going to do a TSA search on you."
"Open your ass."
"What you got hiding in that hole?" With a happy shiver racing down my spine, I do as he asks, trying not to feel self-conscious as I feel his hands on my ass, squeezing and separating so that the most basic parts of me are exposed for his viewing. He squats down behind me to look at my cunt more closely. "Perfect," he says in a whisper. Kissing me there, I moan and shove my hips back, wanting more, and he stands up with a laugh and slaps my ass. "Turn around, Angel."
"What?" He tells her to keep her hands above her head, and he stands back and inspects her body with his eyes.
Finally, when my nipples are hard under his gaze and my cunt wet and swollen from wanting him, he comes close to me. He fingers the ends of my hair idly, almost like a horse buyer does with a horse's mane. "This is all mine now, isn't it?" "Yes," I pant. "This hair and these tits and that pussy, all mine." "Yes, Ash, all yours, please." He gives me a stern look. "When I want you to beg, I'll tell you. My cunt is so tight it hurts. Yes, sir." "Good," he nods, looking back down at my hair between his fingertips. "On your knees."
Hair was number one on his list.
That's his favorite part of her.
It's so weird.
That is very weird to me. It's a little weird. The vibe he's giving off with, like, touching her hair, too. I'm like,
at least it's not, like, her asshole. Like, I'd rather have my hair being played with all the time than my asshole.
That's true. He starts jerking himself off while pulling on her hair.
What the and that's such a visual. I'm just picturing him, like, yanking on her hair with one hand and then furiously jerking himself in the other.
That's literally what's happening.
Can you imagine being her?
She's, like, pulling her head back. She's like, "Yeah.
I love it. Thank you, Mr. President."
He wastes no time, his hand working hard and fast, his eyes searing trails from my face to my tits to my bare knees on the tile, and finally landing on the skein of blonde hair circling his hand, he lets out a low exhale, the furrowed lines of his stomach tensing, and then those dark eyelashes flutter as he comes, aiming not for my tits or my face, but for the hair he's so obsessed with. I watch in hungry fascination as he erupts, thick and hot and long, my gold hair now seeded with the white pearls of his climax. I would have been so pissed.
Does he know how hard that is to get out of hair?
Honestly.
He wouldn't be doing that if he knew.
No.
And she had like long ass hair too, and he just comes all over it.
He's like, I'm gonna come on this hair.
Pro tip, ladies, cold water.
Oh, thank you.
Anytime it's come, you have to use cold water because warm water always makes it slimy and gross and you can't get it out. But cold water like hardens it and it just comes right out.
Genius.
Disgusting. But thank you for that tip.
You're so welcome.
He lifts her up and washes her hair gently, and when they're done, she watches him get dressed. He tells her she deserves more than a man who can only give her scraps of himself and fit her into the margins. She says she'll take what he can give, and he says he knows and tells her to lay down and spread her legs.
His fingers caress my pussy, parting the petals to find the wetness within. I want to give you everything it's possible for me to give. I want to give you everything I can, and I don't want you to be a secret. His long middle finger slides inside me, and my back arches off the bed. He sits next to me, and then there are two fingers, crooking expertly against my sensitive front wall as the heel of his palm grinds against my clit. My body takes to his touch like dry tinder, sparking immediately. Parting the petals. Mom.
She says she doesn't want to be a secret as her orgasm builds, and he tells her to come with him to the state dinner next week. She starts to reach down to touch her clit, and before she can answer, he climbs on top of her and shoves his fingers into her mouth.
You don't get to come unless I say so, Ash says. If I'm holding a Hitachi to your clit while I fuck you, your orgasm are mine, and if you have one without my permission, then you're a thief. You're not a thief, are you? I shake my head, his fingers still deep in my mouth. I can still taste myself on them. A lot sweet, a touch of sour, that rich smell that only seems to come from a cunt.
He says there will be punishments if she disobeys. Maybe he'll put her on the stocks or force her to have 7 orgasms for each one she takes. He gets up off of her and turns to leave, and she's like, you're really leaving me like this? And he says he wants her to say yes to the dinner, but she's like, yeah, but then it would be real. And he says, it's already real. And if she goes, he'll let her come after, and she's like, next week? So she's not allowed to come for a week. He just edged her and is like, see you next week.
Shame.
And he says, yeah, I guess you'll really want to be there, huh? She spends the entire next day at work in turmoil, thinking about the potential heartbreak that comes with involving herself with Ash again. And not to mention that, there's also Embry to think about. And Abby. Because remember, Abby was obsessed with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For the next few nights, she's a ball of sexual frustration, and Ash will even call her at night, commanding her to finger herself, but not to come.
Yeah, would you guys just come?
Yeah,
100%.
But then she'll get put in the stocks. She decides to meet up with her cousin 3 days after her night with Ash, and she goes to Abby's office, where she owns an event planning company. And Greer decides she needs to confess about her history with Ash, because after all these years, Abby is still pining after him. She finds Abby working at her desk and sees a box with Louboutins, the classic.
Louboutins, I forgot about that.
So she sees the box in the corner and asks if she has a date. And Abby says, yeah, some guy asked her out at the gym, but she doesn't want to go. He better be good in bed or she'll be pissed. Greer says she wishes she were more like Abby when it came to casual sex. And Abby's like, girl, you should be. And Greer says she can't just fuck anyone. She needs someone dominating, controlling. And Abby's like, I knew it, you kinky bitch. And she takes a look at Greer and is like, you're glowing. Oh my God, you met someone. Greer says she did, but it's new, but also old. And Abby wants to know everything. Greer's like, remember that party in London with Max and Colchester? Well, we kissed. That night in Chicago, we had a moment, but he was with Jenny, and I fucked Embry Moore. So the president and the vice president of the United States.
Just casually telling, you know, the president of the United States, I fucked him.
What? Also, you know, the vice president, I also fucked him,
they
too.
They both want me.
No wonder she fucking hates you.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Abby is stunned and just says, holy shit. And Greer's like, and then Ash asked me to dinner last week, and now he wants me to go to the state dinner with him, and I just wanted to tell you, and I'm so sorry. Abby has a creepy, calm look on her face and is like, I'm so happy for you, Greer.
You're gonna have such a good time.
She says, wow, so you fucked the president and the vice president. moment, but says hopefully what happened with her and Embry doesn't come back to bite her. After all, men like him have secrets. And Greer's like, do you know something that I don't? Abby says, if you're dating the president, you'll find out soon enough. And I think some women might be able to live with his past, but you're not one of them, honey.
Abby's her cousin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're related.
And her, like, only
she's
best friend.
She's a real cunt.
She's not a nice girl.
Yeah, what the fuck? She's not a girl's girl at all.
Abby's like, okay, well, I'm actually really busy, so you should go. Greer walks home flustered from her conversation to Merlin standing in her living room.
What is this guy's problem?
He's the worst. She's shocked at the intruder, but he says he just wants to talk. She needs to hear a story. Couldn't you have called?
Yeah, Merlin.
I think he just likes the drama.
He tells her about her grandfather's old running mate, President Penley Luther, who fell in love with a married woman who also happened to be his senior advisor. One night at an economic summit, he snuck into her room and they had sex where she fell pregnant. She left her husband and 9 months later died in childbirth, and the baby was put in foster care. And she only knows one person from foster care, and it's Ash. He's an affair baby from the President of the United States. The drama.
Why does she need to know that?
He says, yes, that's Ash, and the story has been brought to the media recently, so if she's to be involved with him, she needs to be prepared for the disruption it'll cause. Which, like, why would you villainize someone for the way they were brought into the world?
Yeah, it was not his fault. They had an affair.
Or that his mother died.
Ash only just found out at Jenny's funeral. His half-sister, by his mother, so same mother, told him out of pure spite and hatred when he was at his most vulnerable, and she was angry at him for killing their mother. Unhinged behavior. He was a baby. He says more will come out about Ash eventually, but nothing he feels she can hear right now, and apologizes for being cruel to her in the past. It was only out of concern for Ash. He knows she'll hurt him badly, but he hopes that she'll bring Ash more joy than pain.
He was mean to her as a 7-year-old girl. He could not have known that.
No.
He's just kind of a dick. He walks out of Greer's home, and she immediately chugs some bourbon to calm her nerves. It's time for the state dinner, and she wants to find Ash for a moment alone before everything starts. She walks into the living room to find Ash sitting on the couch with Embry sitting in front of him on the carpet having some sort of conversation. And then she realizes that Embry is kneeling and they look like they're either about to fight or kiss. Embry tells Greer she looks like a princess in her powder blue gown, and she has to remind herself that she's here for Ash, not for Embry.
Yeah, girl.
But he just looks so sexy in his tux right now. She sits next to Ash on the couch and he runs his fingers along the neckline of her dress, and Embry awkwardly excuses himself. Ash pulls Greer onto his lap, kissing her neck and hiking her dress up, rubbing her along her lace thong.
He hooks it with one finger so he can investigate further. Wet, he confirms in a rasp. You're already wet. Is it for me? Yes, I moan, shivering as his fingers graze my clit. It's for you, because this pussy is mine. Only mine. It gets wet for only me. Is that right? It's not even a lie when I breathe. Yes, yes, it's your pussy. It's wet for you. And it's the truth, somehow, because even when I crave Embry, even when my body keens for him, it's bound up with Ash. Even when I gave my virginity to Embry, it was because of Ash. My body can't separate wanting the two. There's a nip at my neck and a playful smack on my cunt. Keep yourself wet for me, Ash orders as he withdraws his hand from under my skirt. And then, after the dinner, I'm going to spend the rest of the night taking care of my pussy. How does that sound? I sigh, like dinner is going to take too long.
At the dinner, Ash and Greer publicly arrive together, clearly an item, and the press is eating it up. She's sitting next to a senator named Morgan Leffy, and Greer can't place her exactly, but she knows she should know who this is, and the woman leans over to Greer, asking if she's fucked Maxon yet. Greer says that's not her business, and Morgan is like, okay, so no. Has he hurt you yet? Flogged you? Tied you up? Fucked your throat? And Greer's like, what he and I have is very new. And Morgan's like, okay, so yes. Don't worry, Maxon and I are done fucking for now. No need to get jealous.
Bitch.
The way that she'd be catching a knuckle sandwich.
Greer doesn't take the bait and goes overly sweet, saying, you are so beautiful. It's hard not to be jealous. Do you have any pointers? And Morgan tries to deal a low blow, insinuating that she's the granddaughter of the famously liberal and feminist Leo Galloway. So how would he feel about her showing up to the Democratic caucus with belt marks on her ass? Which, like, no one would know because they're on her ass.
Yeah.
Greer's like, I've never found any problem mixing what I want in bed with feminism, did you? Is that why you and Maxon aren't together? Morgan is pissed now and tells her to be careful. She has no idea what secrets Ash keeps, what lies he tells. And besides, if he hasn't fucked Greer yet, perhaps he's getting it somewhere else.
That would get in my head.
Yeah.
Greer is seething with rage and jealousy, and she feels Embry's hand on her shoulder, and he says, I see you finally met my stepsister. He tells Morgan he heard she explicitly asked to be seated next to Greer, and is like, why would that be? She says she just wanted to meet the girl who has the president so preoccupied, and Embry's hands tighten on Greer, and Morgan's like, oh, I see she has you preoccupied too.
She's clocking him left and right.
He tells Morgan to leave Greer alone and steals her away to dance. She asks Embry about the history with Morgan and Ash, and he says they were fucking 3 years before Caledonia, which is one of the countries that there was, like, war in. So before he met Greer. I guess, which she would have been, like, 13.
Right, because he's an adult. I forgot. He's, like, way older. Yeah, yeah.
She's relieved, but feels like that's not the whole truth. Embry says she needs to dance with Ash first, but afterwards, she's all his. He brings Greer to Ash, who's chatting with the Polish president, who says, you must trust this man very much to allow him unfettered access to such a beauty. And Ash says, I do. I trust him with my life. Greer decides to make a joke and says, maybe it's that I trust the vice president to have such unfettered access to Maxon, but nobody laughs. She sees Ash and Embry look at each other and it makes her pussy clench.
Oh.
She starts to dance with Ash, who is actually a horrible dancer, but he tells her he used to be way worse. But Embry practiced with him when they were deployed. Don't worry, they took turns being the man. Greer blushes, thinking about Embry kneeling between Ash's legs earlier. And he's like, are you okay? And she says, yeah, it's just warm in here. He tells her that her and Embry are the most important people to him, and it makes him happy to see how well they're getting along. She considers telling him the truth, but decides against it and tells him she met Morgan and she sucks. And he's like, yeah, she doesn't like me very much. And Greer asks why, and he says, a lot of reasons. She says, those reasons didn't matter when she fucked you, right? And he says, jealousy looks good on her. Don't worry, we haven't fucked in 14 years, but we have been sexual together. A month ago, after Jenny died, he was a shell of himself, and Morgan showed up on his doorstep saying she knew what he needed and brought him to a sex club. He says that he used to try his kinky stuff out on Jenny, but she never reacted well to it.
Shouldn't you figure that shit out before you get married?
Probably.
I loved her, Greer. I gave her tenderness as best as I could, and then after she fell asleep at night, I'd lie awake and think of you. A shadow crosses his face. I'm not proud of that, but it was like the more I tried to fight it, the stronger the need became. The more elaborate the fantasies grew. I'd think about venting my frustration on you, all the things I couldn't do to my wife. In my mind, I did 1,000 times to you.
Jesus Christ.
Bit you, spanked you, ropes, whips, lube. And in my fantasies, you'd thank me, covered in welts in my cum, with makeup smeared on your face. You'd thank me. And then I'd fuck you again. Jesus Christ, Ash. I say, my breath coming fast. Too much? He asks, brow furrowed with concern. Can we leave the dinner? I want you to do all that to me right now. He found his perfect match.
He did. He says that night at the sex club, he didn't fuck anyone. She'll be his first since Jenny died. Morgan put a flogger in his hand and let him hit her. He was immediately hard, and it was somehow healing for him, but he wasn't interested in her and left her naked and alone at the club, and called the next day and told her that he wouldn't touch her, but he needed to do it again with her. They went to the club many times after that, but never played together since Morgan is a dom too.
Oh.
He says he's had everything done to him that he wants to do to her, and it's a long, long list. Kay, Ash's foster sister, comes up telling him about a military movement along the Carpathian border, and they need him immediately. Because remember, he is the president of the United States.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that.
He needs to be briefed in the Situation Room in 20 minutes. Kay introduces herself to Greer and says she's seen the difference in Ash since she spent this past week with him, and Ash kisses Greer's neck as the cameras flash. He tells her to stay at the party and Belvedere will escort her back to the residence. Have her phone ready because he'll be texting her instructions, and she says, okay, and he says, that's my good girl, and leaves with Kay, which, such a gross conversation to have in front of your sister.
Yes. There's, like, no boundaries of what they...
Oh, just wait.
Also, you're the president. Like, that's just so weird. If I heard the president say that, I would be like, what?
He is a freaky president. When she gets to the White House residence, she leaves a text that says, get undressed, freshen up, and when I get back, I don't want you in anything but one of my button downs. You will kneel on the floor in the middle of the room, hands behind your back. eyes down and wait for me when I get there. We are in scene, and you are only allowed to refer to me as Sir or Mr. President. Understood? She writes back and says, yes, sir. And he says, good girl. She does as she's told, and when she's in her position, she has no idea how much time is passing, but she does know she's excited to please him. She hears footsteps walking into the room, and then a second set of footsteps, and it's Embry.
What?
They both look at each other, panicked. So Embry and Greer are like, oh, fuck. Because Ash still doesn't know that they had sex. This is the part where the book just gets absolutely fucking unhinged.
I'm scared.
You should be.
I love it.
Ash says they still have some phone calls to make, so he brought Embry with him to finish, but he didn't want to leave her alone for a second longer.
Ash, Embry says from behind him, his face pale, we can call first thing tomorrow morning. There's no need for me to intrude. His voice breaks off as Ash runs a finger up my thigh to my pussy and carefully slides it inside of me. Despite the deep unease at Embry's presence, my deprived body responds immediately, and I try to push myself down onto the finger, squirming for more contact and more friction. So wet, Ash murmurs. In front of his friend!
Yeah.
Embry makes a strangled noise from his place by the door. Ash withdraws his finger and places it in my mouth for me to suck clean, which I do without question. Lust overriding my better sense. The better sense that tells me there's no way I can do any of this in front of Embry.
Oh my god.
Are they all gonna do it together?
Ash tells Embry to take a seat on the couch and they'll make their calls from there. Greer looks at a deeply uncomfortable Embry and thinks of the night she lost her virginity to him, and she feels so much lust for both men. Embry asks Ash if he's sure, and he leans in close and whispers something into Embry's ear that Greer is unable to hear. But whatever it is, it makes Embry very tense, and he obeys and sits on the couch. Ash commands her to crawl to him, and she's like, but Embry's here. And he says, that's Mr. Vice President to you. And she's like, okay, I can't. Mr. Vice President is here. He'll see me. And Ash says, okay. And she asks why he's doing this. And he says, because he wants to. He asks if there's something she'd like to say, meaning her safe word. And she says, no, sir.
Can I just say that this sounds like a fever dream?
This whole book is a fever dream. This is the part of the book where I know the first half was like unhinged, but the last, absolutely fucking feral, unhinged.
Yeah. Good, Ash says. Then crawl. I crawl, keeping my head down so I can't see whether Embry is looking at me or not, and doing my best to keep my breathing even. I make my way over to Ash's feet on my hands and knees. I should feel demeaned. It's meant to demean, after all. But knowing that both men are affected by the sight of me slouching across the floor like a cat makes me feel strong, sensuous, female. There's the air on my exposed cunt, the shirt riding up over my ass, the stray tendrils of hair hanging down around my face, and I can't help it. It all makes me wetter, hotter, hungrier. She's a freak.
Meow.
Meow. Purr, baby, purr.
Ash's hand rests on her lap, and he tells her she's such a good girl, and he tells her to come sit on his lap. She does, her bare pussy on his slacks.
I told you I'd take care of your orgasm tonight, Ash says. This is me taking care of it. Sir, ride me, rub against me, whatever you need to do to come. But you have to be quiet, since I'll be on the phone.
He's running a country.
He's the president!
She looks over to Embry, who's staring at her ass, but quickly looks away. But catching him watching her is thrilling. She asks Ash if this is a test or something, but he says no. And she says she doesn't know if she can come in front of Embry. And now she's asking herself if Ash knows about her and Embry and how he's totally seen her come before.
I think you want to, Ash replies. Deep down, there's a part of you that wants him to see you all flushed and tussled, that wants him to see how well you can obey me, how pretty that pussy is. Isn't that right? I'd be like, what do you know? Do you know something?
He reassures her that this won't negatively affect their relationship, and then he picks up the phone, motioning for her to be quiet because he's on the phone with the Ukrainian ambassador.
Oh, you know. I'm listening in, my eyes glued to the phone, when I feel a thumb against my clit, hard and rough, rubbing small circles against the swollen bud. In an instant, all the banked desire from the last week is there, all-consuming, obliterating past and present, obliterating the future, destroying everything that isn't the painful ache in my cunt as I push into Ash's touch. He pushes back, hard, giving my clit a light pinch that sends my eyes rolling back into my head. He does it again for good measure and I gasp, clapping my hand over
my mouth once I realize my mistake, eyes darting back to the phone.
He raises his eyebrow at her, as if asking if she can be quiet, and she nods vigorously, so he continues. He ends the call when the conversation is finished, and she's desperately humping his thigh, desperate to come.
My thigh is all you get right now. If you behave, you can earn more. My mouth, maybe. Would you like that? My shudder is all the answer he needs. He looks past me to Embry. She's a good girl, isn't she, Embry? His friend's voice is hoarse when he answers yes. Oh my god, hot. I would have been like, woo, woo, woo!
Just start barking, crawling around on the ground.
Ash looks at his friend, his finger rubbing at his forehead. Do you still want to go, Embry? Once again, Embry takes a long time to answer, but when he does, it's definitive. No, I want to stay. A smile curls Ash's mouth. I thought so. Would you like to see more of her? Maybe without the shirt? There's a pause that seems to last forever, and in that pause I hear 5 years worth of agony. Yes. Embry finally replies.
Oh my god. I'm blushing. Like, I'm literally sitting here like...
I will say, this part kind of hot.
She takes off her shirt and both men let out a gasp when her tits are out. Ash commands her to touch them and pull on her nipples, his dick looking painfully hard in his pants.
I want your cock, I blurt. I want to be fucked by it. Please. Please fuck me. Please, sir. His eyes glow with something like amusement, but his voice returns to the nonchalance of earlier. My cock is a privilege, Angel. Being fucked is a privilege, and all privileges have to be earned. I must visibly deflate at this because he strokes my arm. When I take your pussy, it's going to be special. We only get one first time together, and I know exactly when I want that to be. What's wrong with right now? I whine. That earns me another swift smack on the ass. Turn around and face Embry. He wants to see those gorgeous tits of yours. He wants to see your face when you come. He already has, baby.
You don't know that.
She flips around and makes eye contact with Embry as she rubs herself on Ash's leg, completely bare and exposed to both of them. The phone rings again and Ash answers it and tells Greer to get to work as both men start to talk to the ambassador again.
I start grinding against Ash's leg, my eyes on Ash's friend the entire time. As he watches and attempts to talk along with Ash, I slide my hands up my stomach to my breasts, squeezing them hard, the way he squeezed them that night in Chicago, the way he touched me like he'd never get to touch a woman again. His eyes follow my hands, his teeth digging deep into his lip. And when I start fucking Ash's thigh again, his hand curls into a fist on his knee. I imagine I'm fucking him. I imagine I'm fucking Ash. I imagine I'm fucking both of them. I imagine them fucking each other. I imagine all three of us in a tangle of sweat and thrusting, all barriers stripped away. Every hot inch and sweet hole available without question. And it's this final image that sets the gears of my climax whirring, spinning tighter and tighter until I can feel it poised in front of my womb, a ticking thing ready to explode. My womb.
She's got quite the imagination.
She has the longest, most intense orgasm of her life, and Ash grabs her hair, yanking her back, and tells her that was beautiful, but she's not done yet.
God, what more do you want? With his hands moving to my waist, he lifts me and sets me on the ground so that I'm kneeling in front of him. There's a large wet stain on his tuxedo pants where I sat, a stain that I left. Look at what you did. I cast my eyes around for something to clean him with, but he stops me with a hand fisted in my hair. He guides my mouth to his leg. Lick it clean.
She's humiliated and she loves it. She starts licking his pants and Ash presses his hand between her shoulder blades to force her ass up and display every inch of her to Embry.
Oh my god. As I'm licking up the traces of myself, Ash says to Embry, "You're hard." Embry doesn't speak, but he must nod, because then Ash says, "Pull it out. Show Greer what she's done to you."
Embry's hands are shaking as he undoes his fly, and he looks disgusted with himself.
Oh my god. Then I see the tip of him, the dusky, flared cap with a bead of moisture at the slit. Oh my god. And I lick my lips, thinking of Chicago, remembering the way that cock invaded me and claimed me. Said, "Come here, girl.
This is my home now."
Tore me and fucked me. Embry sees me lick my lips and his head drops back against the sofa with a moan. "All of it, Embry," Ash admonishes. You show us all of it. With a couple of quick, jerky movements, Embry shoves his pants farther down his hips so that all 8 hard inches are exposed. His balls are high and tight, like he's already close to losing it. And when he puts his thumb at his root and slowly pushes his cock toward us so that it points straight to the ceiling, I see the muscles tensing in his stomach and thighs. He's breathing fast, his eyes on Ash as he keeps himself displayed for us. Like that? I'm surprised at the huskiness in Ash's voice as he answers, yeah, just like that.
You wanna fuck your friend, Ash? Are the boys gonna fuck? Are they gonna kiss?
Ash is like, wasn't I so nice to let Greer come like that? And Embry says, yes. Ash asks how she should thank him, and after a second, Embry says she should thank you with her mouth. Ash tells Greer to put her mouth on his dick, and she does. She's been dying to do this for ages, and she's going to absolute town on him.
Oh, fuck me, Ash groans, his large hand sliding through my hair and resting on the back of my head. Yes, Angel, just like that. Holy shit. What does it feel like? Embry asks. Hot, wet. Her lipstick is smearing around my base. Shit. He swears as I start sucking up and down as fast as I can. She's so fucking eager. Look at this.
He starts to fuck her throat as drool and tears stream down her face.
That's right, he hisses, his head falling back once more. Drain me. Take it all. Oh fuck, Angel, here it comes. Hot spurts hit the back of my throat, thick and long pulses of him, a deep animal grunt leaving his mouth at the apex of his climax. He holds my head over him as he thrusts through the rest of his orgasm, making sure I've had every last drop of his milk.
Ew.
Before he finally loosens his grip and lets me go. Without being asked, I licked him from root to tip, cleaning his satisfied flesh until I feel a finger under my chin. I lift my face to his, and his face is filled with so much warmth and pride that fresh tears prick at my eyelids. Well done, my little princess, the president says. I'm so proud of you.
The president.
Don't forget.
Of USA, baby.
He jumps up as Embry tries to walk out the door and grabs his arm, and he tells Embry that he can see he's still hard.
I can't stay here. I'll let you leave if you can show me you're not erect, Ash says, and I've never heard anything so soft and menacing and filthy. Pull it out and show me. Prove to me you don't want this and you can go.
Ash, oh my god.
He's an assertive man.
He is.
That's why he's the president. He begs Ash to please just let him go, and Ash is like, does Greer need to come over here and help you out? And Embry's like, okay.
He's like, okay, I'll stay.
You talked me into it. Twisted my arm.
There's complete silence in the room as Embry bends to Ash's will and unfastens his pants and slowly withdraws his penis. It's harder than ever, swollen and dark and angry. Throbbing with every beat of his heart. Even though I just came moments earlier, my pussy gives a whiny little throb of its own.
Ash commands Greer to go get her dress from earlier and give it to him.
I hand the dress to Ash and he hands it to Embry. Relieve yourself. What? Embry's voice is a study in breathless incredulity. Ash nods toward the dress. It's soft, isn't it? The dress? And Greer looks so beautiful in it, didn't she? Like a fucking princess, you said when you saw her. Did you think about fucking her in it tonight? I freeze. Embry's blue eyes flare with torment. Ash goes on. Did you think about what it would be like to rub your bare cock against all that silk before you finally shoved inside her little pussy? About how the silk would feel fisted in your hands while you pinned her to the ground and fucked her? Ash, I choke out. He ignores me. She would have liked it, I think, watching you defile that expensive dress as you defiled her. And it would have felt so good, wouldn't it? All that blue silk and that sweet pussy. The most beautiful woman in the room, a thrall to your cock. Embry stares at him. I know why you're doing this. I know. Now wrap that dress around your cock and relieve yourself. Ash's voice turns seductive, dark and tempting. I bet it would only take a couple of pulls, don't you? And it will feel so good, fucking that dress you've been obsessed with all night, marking it. It will feel so good to have Greer see how big your cock gets as you pretend to fuck her. How much cum you could fill her with if she'd only let you. Jesus, Embry pants. The muscle in his arm bunching as he slowly fists his erection with the skirt of my dress. The silk slides easily over his straining flesh, whispering softly on his cock. Oh, Jesus. The last word breaks into a moan. His head falls back against the door as he's lost himself. But he can't resist seeing his cock on my dress, and he looks back down. All three of us watch as it moves in and out of the silk, rude and male against the pretty blue flutters of fabric. Ash was right. It doesn't take long. And with a shuddering exhale, Embry releases. Thick ropes of cum spray my dress. Spurt after spurt after thick spurt. Each pulse accompanied by a crude jerk of his hips. My nipples are so tight it hurts. Same with my cunt. And oh God, how I wish Embry's cock were inside me now. That those crude jerks were plowing into me. That all that cum was mine.
Ash is like, doesn't that feel better? Embry nods and Ash asks Greer if she liked watching it. And she says, yes, sir. Embry's like, I'm leaving now, for real. And he turns and walks out. And Ash tells Greer he needs her mouth again. And she realized that watching Embry made him hard.
Ash doesn't go easy on my mouth. But before he comes, he pulls out and reaches down for me, picking me up easily in his arms and carrying me to the bed. He spreads my legs and drapes them over his shoulders, pressing his hot, skillful mouth against my pussy and devouring me. I come with his dark head and wide shoulders between my thighs, and then he's straddling my chest, fucking my mouth to get his cock wet, and then fucking my tits. When he finally comes, his hands mean and bruising as he pushes my breasts around his cock. It's with something almost like a roar, like the orgasm is torn from him.
That night, she wakes up to Ash doing this little Dutch rudder to her, and she's like, this is what guys do together, I think. So, like, he put her hand on his dick and then was, like, moving her hand. The Dutch rudder.
I've never heard of that.
He finally seems satisfied, and they both fall asleep for the rest of the night. 6 weeks pass, and it's Christmas Eve. They're at Camp David, and the three of them are making popcorn cranberry garland. It's just the three of them and the Secret Service until Ash's foster sister and mother fly in on Christmas Day. Greer tells Embry that they need to find someone to kiss him under the mistletoe, thinking she wishes she could do it. And she looks kind of bummed and says maybe he could ask one of the Secret Service. They haven't had a repeat of that eventful night, and Embry is kind of just man-whoring around and being a third wheel for Greer and Ash, but they've fallen into a comfortable routine between the three of them. And Ash and Greer still haven't fucked. That afternoon, Embry's taking a nap and Ash asks her to take a walk with him, and she's worried because it seems like something is bothering him. He takes her into the woods and clears off a stump for her to sit on, and she tells him how happy this getaway has made her. But he has a somber expression on his face, and she's like, are you not happy? And he says, no, I'm not. And she's like, oh fuck, he's gonna end things. He says they need to talk. It's about Morgan. And she's like, oh my God, are you fucking her? So Morgan is Embry's stepsister, the lady that was like harassing her at the dinner. And she says, did you go to the club with her? Is that why we haven't had sex? And he says, no, of course not. He'll never sleep with her again. And he needs her to know that she's perfect for him, both in bed and out of it. He tells her that Morgan is his half-sister. They share the same mother, the mother that died giving birth to him.
What? He is fucking his sister. Surprise.
To be fair, we fucked her once 14 years ago.
And he didn't know.
Oh, he didn't know at the time.
Yeah, after he found out they were siblings, he still went to the sex club with her.
And that's...
But he just beat the shit out of her.
And that's not step-sibling. You blood.
Yeah, that's his half-sister. Yeah. They have the same
mom. Unfortunate.
He sees the disgust on her face and he's like, yes, I fucked my own sister. But I didn't know. I don't know if she did, but I didn't know until Jenny's funeral. He doesn't even know if it matters that he didn't know because he pursued her. He fucked her and he liked it. He tells her about his time in combat, how he killed teenage boys and girls, the Carpathians forced to fight, strangled them, beat them, stabbed them, you name it. That's why he doesn't sleep. When he was newly promoted to a commanding officer, he was put into a position where he had to choose between saving a church full of burning civilians and a burning boat filled with children, and he chose the children. He sent 4 men to try and save the people in the church, but it was a trap, and most of the 40 civilians were killed. Morgan was in the church touring it while visiting Embry, and they'd known she was in there, but she miraculously survived. She was the sole survivor, and then she heard that Ash had decided to sacrifice the church for the boat, even though he knew she was in there, and now she hates him for it.
Well, yeah, that's hard.
Greer tells him that he did the best he could, and that's good enough for her, and he's like, I just told you I fucked my sister and almost got her killed, and now you're comforting me? And he says he couldn't move forward with her until she knew. And she says, these are the sins of a good man. And if it took killing all those people to bring me and you together, then maybe it was for the greater good.
She's like, I've loved you forever, baby. I don't care.
I've loved you since I was a child.
Honestly.
He collapses into her and asks what he did to deserve her. And seeing him this raw and vulnerable is really doing something to Greer. She tells him she loves him, and he says he doesn't deserve her words, but he'll take it, and says he loves her too. They kiss passionately, and he tells her he has something for her. He gets down on one knee and asks her to marry him. God. Greer feels like they're destined to be together, and she gets down in the snow with him and says yes.
Wouldn't that have been a good time to be like, okay, since we're telling secrets, Amber and I have fucked.
Yeah. I mean, he can't get mad. He just told you he fucked his
sister. Honestly, would have been the perfect time. So they get back to the lodge, and even though they have every right to be together with just them two, they're kind of sneaking around and trying to hide it from Embry because they feel like they're cheating on him somehow. Gear's thinking, oh shit, Ash just told me about Morgan. I really need to tell him about Embry and how I lost my virginity to his best friend. She's low-key scared of how he's going to react to the news, though, and realize that's why she's been putting it off this whole time. She's about to confess to Ash once they get into the room, but he stops her by saying that he's been fantasizing about wanting to make her completely his for the past 10 years.
Since you were the ripe age of 16.
He tells her that he wants to give her exactly what she wants, since this is their first time together. She knows that he obviously has a more kinky side, and she basically tells him that he doesn't have to take it nice and sweet with her. He gave her a safe word for a reason, and she has just as much power as he does, knowing that she can just say the safe word and make it all stop. Then he demands her to take off his shoes, and she tries to hide her smile, but he sees it anyways, and he asks her if she's happy serving him, and she says, yes, Mr. President. He strips her clothes off, and now she's completely naked, bending over, putting her hands on the floorboard of the bed. Greer knows what's coming next. Mr. President starts spanking her. He spanks her 11 times, and she loves the pain along with the submission. Ash kisses her tears away, and then kisses her pussy.
He rubs my back as he tongues me, pets my thighs as if I were a horse that needed gentling. And God help me, I love it.
Whoa, girl.
I buck into his touch, practically purring as he runs his warm hands over my abused flesh. And occasionally I hear him chuckle to himself as I get especially eager. He's just back there like,
She was just on the verge of orgasming when Ash spreads her ass cheeks apart.
He silences me with one lick, one brush of his tongue against my darkest secret.
Darkest secret.
Is she talking about her puss?
He's talking about her butthole.
I'm gonna start calling my butthole my darkest secret. The sensation is nothing I've ever felt. Too shallow, too slick, too dirty, too everything. And I squirm frantically away from him. 100 what-ifs run through my mind, only to be chased away by a fingertip and Ash's stern voice. This is mine, little princess. My hole? Yes. The fingertip is probing, pushing, gradually and almost lazily breaching my most elemental barrier. What a description for some butt play.
Yep.
My most elemental barrier.
My darkest secret.
I'll never tell.
He tells her that her ass, her pussy, her mouth, every hole belongs to him, as he is now fingering her ass and her pussy at the same time.
And this ass, this is mine to bite or to spank. And the hole there, that's mine to lick, mine to play with, mine to fuck. Isn't that right? That's right, I gasp. Mine to show off, mine to display. I could order you to display yourself in the middle of the Oval Office, to pull down whatever pretty pencil skirt you're wearing and have you bend over for inspection, like a prize animal at a show. Would you like that? The thought is so degrading, so awful, that of course it triggers a wave of submissive lust. You don't have to answer, Greer. Your pussy just answered for me. It said, yeah!
It said, yes, Mr. President! He picks her up and throws her onto the bed and tells her to lay down on her stomach to show him her face. And that they're going to try something new and to remember her safe word, Maxon, in case she needs it. Then he undoes his belt. He starts belting her, and when he hits her upper thighs, she almost uses her safe word. But just as she was about to say it, she gets a huge endorphin rush and it goes straight to her pussy. She's hella turned on now and she's like, don't you dare stop. He's unleashing a little bit harder on her, and she's like actually crying now because she's like, fuck, this actually really, really hurts. But she refuses to quit because mama did not raise no quitter. The last one is on her ass and she's screaming now, and he drops the belt and he tells her that she's such a sweet, obedient princess and starts eating her out like a possessed man worshiping her.
He slides a finger into my vagina and then another, and then a third probes at the tight hole underneath, and I explode into a tornado of misery and shame and pain and sensation. I think I'm screaming again, and I'm definitely crying as this climax tears through me, punches a hole straight through me like a hammer through sheetrock. I can barely see, barely hear. It's just feel, feel, feel as I come with my skin on fire and my muscles sizzling. Oh my God.
I'm trying to be like you, my girl. Yeah.
As she's still coming, Ash starts fucking her. It's such a tight fit that she says that she feels like she's losing her virginity all over again. And then she starts comparing Ash and Embry's sex while she's actively fucking Ash. As she's thinking about Embry's dick, Ash is asking if he's bigger than him and if he makes her come harder than him. And she's like, what the fuck? Can he read my mind? She remembers that he doesn't know that she was fucking his bestie. She's like, wait, how? He doesn't know that it's Embry. So then she just starts screaming, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, no.
He's continuing to fuck the ever-living shit out of her, and she has yet another orgasm, and this man is making her believe that magic is real. She's seeing stars. Ash came inside of her, and he fills her up so much that there's literally cum spilling out of her, and she realizes that she's still crying, and she's shaking, and Ash is holding her, and he just says, I love you, I love you. Once she comes back down to Earth, she realizes now is the time that she needs to tell him about how she lost her virginity to Embry, and his response was, I know. She starts panicking and she's like, what do you mean you know? And he's like, I guessed. She kind of tells him the whole story of how it happened, and she tells him that it didn't mean anything.
So he knows they fucked.
Yeah. But no one
and
told
him. And
he's
chill about he just
it. He's like hurt, but he's not like flipping out.
They're gonna fuck or something's gonna happen.
She tries telling Ash that it didn't mean anything, and he was like, don't lie to me. And she's like, of course it meant something, but I left my number for him. He never called me. Like, maybe it didn't mean anything to him. It must have been the worst night of his life. Like, probably the worst sex. I just lost my virginity. Ash started telling her about the next morning, about how he met with Embry, like, right after the whole thing happened, when she left from the convention crying. How him and Embry met the next morning, and Embry wanted to tell him about this angel that he met, that he was in love. But before Embry could tell Ash about his story, Ash told him about how this girl was at the party and found out about him and Jenny's engagement, because he was too much of a coward to tell her right away. And that girl ended up being Emo Girl. The letters that he kept in his pocket all those years were from her, and he told Embry her name. After Ash finished telling Embry his story, he just changed the subject and never brought it up again.
He's like, oh, oops, we love the same girl.
Oh, fuck. Ash also tells Greer that after the night he brought Embry in the room with them, it helped him see it too, that obviously Embry was attracted to her, but he could tell there was something else there too, and they were so cautious around each other, like too cautious. Never getting too close to each other, never talking too long to each other. It was like what people do when they're in love with someone that they shouldn't be. She tries telling Ash that she's not in love with Embry, and he was like, I told you not to lie to me. Ash starts asking her how Embry fucked her, and she was telling him what Embry did to her, and Ash was doing the same thing to her, like reenacting it. He was like, where did he put his hands? And then she told him, and then he was like putting his hands like where she told him. She tells him that she didn't tell Embry she was a virgin until he was trying to get inside of her, and when he did, he got mean. And Ash said that it should have been him and his cock, and Greer said that everything can be yours now, Mr. President. As Ash is inside her fucking her, Ash tells her that he wants to feel what Embry felt, that he's pretending that he's him, and asks if she's pretending too. And then she had another orgasm. She asks Ash if he's okay, and he says he doesn't know. He says that he's definitely feeling something because he feels possessive of her, but then again, he feels possessive of Embry. Greer falls asleep, and she wakes up alone in bed. She's hungry, so she goes to the kitchen to find a snack, and she turns the corner, and she sees Ash standing under the mistletoe kissing someone. And immediately, her heart is fucking broken.
His hand is fisted tight in the shirt of the person he's kissing, yanking that person close and holding them there. And when they turn, I see that person is, inevitably, fatefully, tragically, wonderfully, Embry. Still in his sweater and jeans, barefoot and rumpled, with his hands underneath Ash's shirt and digging into the small of his back. The tea.
They kiss like there's hesitation and also like they're relearning old steps. It's filled with longing and passion, and Embry finds the waistband of Ash's pajama pants, and Ash groans. She definitely doesn't want it to end, but at the same time, she's angry and betrayed and curious because her fucking fiance is kissing his best friend, and she's just like, what the hell? Was anyone gonna tell me?
She's like, I want to join.
Ash tells Embry Merry Christmas and walks away back into his study, and Embry's left standing under the mistletoe with swollen lips and then goes back into his room. Greer's left alone in the hallway, confused, hurt, turned on, jealous, and in love. Ash's family arrives the next morning, and she instantly gets along very well with Ash's mom, who told her to call her mama, which obviously is like a huge deal to her because her parents have passed away. Her thoughts go back to the night before, thinking, do they kiss every day? Was this the first time that they've kissed? Have they fucked before? Are they fucking now? Is a kiss even considered cheating? The day after Christmas, everything goes to crap as far as presidential duties go. Ash is busy dealing with environmental crises, bills needing to be reworked, speeches, you name it, he has to do it. So now she hasn't seen Ash or Embry hardly at all. Ash invites her to a Republic meeting between the United States and Carpathia, and she says yes, absolutely, right away, and she invites her bestie cousin Abilene. Merlin is making them stay in different hotels though, so Abilene and Greer have to stay in a different hotel than the president for some reason, because he says under no circumstances are they allowed to room together, probably due to one of his weird vision things. They're talking a little bit about the wedding planning, and she says, honestly, when it comes to the wedding, as long as I have time to teach and my dress is pretty, I don't really care. Ash says he wants two things. If she's not attached to having it in a particular place, he wants it to be at the church where he grew up in Kansas City, and he doesn't want to see her the day of the wedding. Greer notices that Abilene tries to rein it in so hard when she's around Ash, so she knows that her cousin lied to her when she said that her crush over Ash was over. They pull up to the Marquee Hotel, and Abilene was like, I thought we were staying at the Four Seasons. And Greer tells her that Merlin asked the Secret Service to float a few different hotel names to go through the process of vetting each one, so it's impossible to tell which one would be picked for security purposes. Greer is wearing this really pretty flowy white silver dress that she really liked and thought it would complement her really well. And Abilene looked at her and was like, that's what you're wearing? And she was like, what's wrong with it? And she's like, seems a little bit flat. And Greer like super second guessed her choice and went to go pick out another dress. There was a knock on her door and Abilene went to go answer it, and it was Ash. Abilene is standing there literally drooling over Ash. And for a split second, Greer legit almost thought that Abilene was about to step forward and kiss him. After a few seconds, she steps back and he walks inside, and then he sees Greer and he's like, you are fucking perfect. Ash tells Abilene that Embry does not have anyone to walk with and says that Embry's an excellent date and that Greer can attest to it, like being kind of jealous over it. When Embry sees Greer when they get to the event, he literally stops himself from licking his lips, and Ash says, doesn't she look divine, Mr. Moore? And he says, good enough to eat, Mr. Colchester. So Melois Coker, he is the Ukrainian president, and his wife Lenka, they walk in immediately after Greer. Greer immediately notices that she has glossy eyes that are like vacant, and she realizes that she's been crying. And when she gets up close, she notices how the president's hands are sinking in too tight on Lenka's arms and how skinny and how vacant she looks. Greer's trying to make small talk, but Lenka doesn't speak any English and Greer doesn't speak Ukrainian. But finally, they find the common ground of both of them being able to speak German. Once dinner is done, Lenka has to dance with Ash and Greer has to dance with Melois. And Greer tries to reassure her that Ash is not mean and that he's a very genuine person. And Lenka's like, yeah, my husband's literally the opposite. I'm really sorry. Greer is like, it's not your fault that he's unkind. I promise I can take care of myself. Nothing that he does is your responsibility. Greer is dancing with Melois and he told her that he was there that day in the village where Ash decided to save the boat full of burning children rather than a church full of civilians, and that it's not very heroic. And Greer lashes back and says, are you saying that all those deaths are on the president's hand and not the men who shot them or the men who lit the boat full of children on fire?
Yeah.
It kind of egged the Ukrainian president on though, and he smiles at her and tells her that she's got spirit and he really likes that in a woman. She calls him a monster and that only monsters try to kill women and that a real man wouldn't pass the blame onto someone else. And he yanks her close to him and he tells her that he would enjoy giving her a lesson very much and that she feels him hard up against gross. Her. He apologizes for being ugly as such a beautiful woman. And he's like, perhaps you can visit me tonight. She's like, you know that will literally never happen, like over my dead body. He tells her maybe not tonight, but someday he'll see what the great hero gets to enjoy every night.
Ew.
She stands her ground and she's like, let me make it clear. I am not interested tonight or ever. And of course, he takes that as a challenge. And he tells her that he's not had a challenge in a very long time. And she just gets close and says, you will lose, with such certainty and calmness that his grip on her loosens. And then Embry steps up. Greer and Embry start dancing. Having his hands on her literally makes her so horny. She's trying to distract herself and she decides to be open with him and tells him that she she told Ash how she lost her virginity, and he tells her that he knows because Ash came to him on Christmas Eve and he was jealous, and he's not sure of Ash's motives. Is he trying to torture him? He told Greer that he couldn't go back to her after Chicago, not after knowing that she was email girl. Ash read her emails basically 24/7 for years, and to find out that the mysterious email girl was her, the girl that Embry decided to marry after less than 8 hours of being together. When he said that, Greer was literally feeling so vulnerable because the whole time she thought that he didn't want anything to do with her, and she was so hurt because she exposed her heart to him and then he literally like ghosted her. He started laughing when she said that because he said that he burned with wanting for her and that he still wants her, but Embry said that he can't pretend anymore, that he's consumed with her and that he's in hell watching her with Ash. He begs her just to tell him that she feels the same way, that this is eating her alive and that he is not alone. So she's honest, and she tells Embry that she loves him, and that she fell in love with him the night in Chicago, that she wants them both, him and Ash.
Together.
Do it.
She also tells him that she saw him and Ash together on Christmas Eve, and he tries to tell her that it's not what she thinks, and she's like, what, the two men that I love aren't also in love with each other?
Called him out?
He tells her, it all started in Carpathia, the battle where Ash was first declared a hero because he carried a wounded Embry out from battle.
And they said, we had nobody else to fuck but each other.
Basically.
Once Ash got everyone to the basement and to safety, it was just him and Embry that were the last two people, and Embry got shot twice, really badly. Ash pretty much carried Embry out, and they fought off the Carpathian soldiers. The adrenaline buzzing for some people, it slows them down, it makes them stunned, but for Ash, it makes him restless, and it makes his blood hot. Embry said that Ash saved his life, so he wanted to show him how grateful he was, and he let Ash fuck him.
That's what you do.
Hey, man, you saved me. Do you want to fuck me?
They actually fucked a few times, because once wasn't enough to calm Ash down. He ultimately tells her that they fucked on and off for several years, even fucking several times after Jenny died, until this fall, and that was when they stopped again. But they haven't hooked up ever since her and Ash started dating. Greer almost starts crying because she said that Ash lied to her. He said that he hasn't been with anyone since Jenny died, and Embry's like, well, did he say anyone or any woman? And she's like, you know what? That sneaky motherfucker. Now that I think about it, he did say any woman.
You should have asked if you wanted to know.
I'm not lying. I'm omitting the truth.
She's just more angry with the fact that they've been keeping this from her when it's like a huge deal because they're both obviously in love with each other, and also because she's horny as fuck and she really wants to see it.
I'm shaking with how hot it makes me to think about the two of you together. I wish I could have seen it. I wish I could have been there, taking you in my mouth while he fucked you. I wish I could have seen his face as he came.
Maybe he will. She pulls herself close against Embry and she realizes that he's rock hard. And he confesses that it's confusing to him because he can't keep track of who or what he wants anymore. Due to security measures, Ash wants her to room with him because he thinks that she's going to be a target for Melwas. When she gets to the hotel room, Abilene is like abnormally cheerful and she jumps out of bed and she's like, Greer, you're back. She informs her cousin that Ash wants her to change rooms due to security measures. And Abilene's like, oh, just due to security? Okay, no big deal. She gets back to the hotel room with Ash, ready to come swinging. She's like pissed. And she looks at Ash and he just looks so tired and she really wants to have this fight with him. But she's like, how the fuck can he be tired when I need him to be strong? Like, I want to scream into the void. He's a stupid, dumb idiot. And he states the obvious and he's like, you're upset about something. And she's like, yeah. And he's like, well, then we have a few things to talk about. She's like, Embry told me that he loved me and I love him back. A moment of like hurt flashes across his eyes. But he's like, what did Embry say? And she's like, not much of anything, because right after I told him that, I told him that I saw you two kissing on Christmas Eve.
Tell him.
Ooh.
Tell him.
He's like, oh my God, Greer, why didn't you say anything to me?
Crazy. He like flips it back on her.
This is your fault, Greer.
Yeah. He apologizes to her for breaking the trust, and he understands if this changes things between them, that he kissed Embry and that he liked it, that he's not going to justify what he did, but he is going to admit that it was wrong, that he is sorry. And she says, I don't want your sorry. I want all of us to make sense. She tells Ash that Embry thinks that he doesn't love him back. Why would he, with the awful way that Ash treats him? Ash drops the ultimate bomb and tells Greer that he asked Embry to marry him twice, and Embry said no both times.
A gay presidente? say? Go off. Why'd Embry say no?
A power couple.
The first time he proposed, they were in Carpathia. They were dating for 2 years, but Embry insisted that he didn't tell anyone, and Embry said no because it wasn't legal back then, and he was worried about their careers and their families. He didn't give him another reason, though. He just said no. After Jenny died, the night that Morgan took him to the club and let him flog her, he went straight to Embry and pretty much unleashed everything on him. All of his grief, his pain, obviously this new sister that he also fucked. Embry, like, welcomed him with open arms, and then he proposed again. He thought this time it was going to be different because it was legal, but unfortunately it wasn't. A few weeks later, it felt like fate, though, because he saw Greer in church, and immediately Embry volunteered to help him at first because he thought he wanted to make amends for rejecting his ring a second time. But now he knows better. He just wanted to see her. He tried to reassure Greer that he's not telling her this to make her feel like a second choice. He's just trying to tell her that what he had with Embry was serious and the realest thing he's ever felt until he was able to be in a relationship with Greer, and that he didn't kiss him because he wanted to hurt her. He kissed him because sometimes he feels like he might literally die from wanting to feel his lips on his.
I wouldn't like hearing
no.
that.
Greer just says that she understands and that she's not going anywhere.
Would you like it if Embry were here right now? Ash asks. I can hear the smallest raw edge in his voice, as if he's aroused by his own words. Underneath you, while I'm on top, the two of us pressing against you, demanding satisfaction and attention, and when we've taken everything we can from you, would you like to watch us fuck each other? You should see how fast Embry comes when he's getting fucked, Greer. It's really quite something. He's like, please say yes, please say yes, please say yes.
Greer wants to know where they go from here, and Ash says that they can't decide without Embry. Whatever comes next, the decision should be between the three of them. Embry's off limits to both of them until this whole thing is sorted out. Ash tells her that there's one more thing they have to talk about. It's Abilene. Tonight at the dinner, after he spoke to Merlin, she tried to kiss Ash.
Sneaky bitch.
She's a cunt.
Ash really thinks that she's not looking out for Greer's best interests, and Abilene said that she would make a better wife than Greer ever would, and that she could make him happier.
Not true. You can't handle the shit that Ash wants.
No.
Ash, of course, had our girl's back and told her that that wasn't possible because Greer was the perfect woman for him. And that's why she was acting so weird in the hotel room, because that was obviously the night that it happened. And she's like, oh, just security measures? Oh, that's all? Okay, good. Because she was worried that Ash told her right then and
there. How dumb also is she to think that, like, he wouldn't say something? I would have immediately, like, gone to her and been like, you're a bitch-ass hoe, and we are not friends.
Or cousins.
Overnight, Greer is transformed into America's sweetheart. Her face is printed pretty much on every single magazine cover. She's online everywhere. People are coming up and trying to take pictures with her, trying to get autographs. Embry, Ash, and Greer still haven't found time to sit down with each other and talk between the three of them. The day before the wedding, they're in Kansas City doing the rehearsal dinner, and the whole time she's aware of Embry just sitting there watching them, and she realizes that it must be absolute hell for him watching her and Ash. Today is the wedding day, and she's looking in the mirror for like the 20,000th time. She hears a knock on the door, and she thinks it's Abilene who's coming back from getting her veil, and she tells the person to come in. It's Embry.
Hey, baby.
She feels like she can't look him in the eyes because she doesn't want to see the torment she knows that is written on his face, but he steps forward and he says her name, and she looks up into his eyes and sees pain everywhere on his face. She's like, what are you doing here? And he tells her that he just wants to see her and lovingly strokes her cheek. Of course, because she's a horn dog and she loves Embry, she's like instantly horny just from that little touch, and she's thinking about how badly she wants him. She tells him that he has to go, and she turns to walk away, and Embry says that he can't yet, and that Ash asked him to deliver a present. She slowly turned around, and she realizes that he's holding out her phone, and when she takes the phone, she hears Ash's voice telling her that he wish he could be there right now, and that the first time that he sees her, he wants to be surrounded by their friends and family, watched over by God. He tells her that he wants to give her a present now, and to hand the phone back to Embry.
Is the present that she can fuck him?
And Embry doesn't say anything. He just listens, and then holds the phone back to Greer, and then starts getting on his knees, and he starts slowly lifting up her wedding dress.
Insanity.
He's like, yeah, fuck my fiance on our wedding day.
It's a present.
Ash tells her that he wants to give her something that she could carry with her throughout their new life together. Something that would make her a promise. She pleads with Ash or Embry that she's not even sure who she's talking to at this point, not to test her like this. Ash just tells her to relax, that this isn't a test, that this is a gift, and this is something that she deserves. She's like, there is no way that Ash is offering off his best friend to me as a wedding gift when we agreed that Embry is off limits until we figured everything out. Ash tells her that his gift is listening in on them, that every single moan, pant, and cry will be for him.
Answer me, Ash demands. Are you wet right now? Do you want it? Yes. The word comes out strangled and hopeless. I knew you did, Ash says. I knew you wanted it. Spread your legs, sweetheart, and let Embry make you feel good.
Insane! She tells him that she doesn't want to hurt Ash by being with Embry. And in this moment, he just responds by saying, this all hurts. This entire thing hurts. It hurts that I've asked him to marry me twice and he said no. It hurts that he's with you right now. And there's no part about this that doesn't hurt. But living without this pain means living without the two of you. At least this way, I can make it feel good as much as it hurts. Embry starts teasing her and driving her wild. Embry pulls her underwear to the side, exposing her pussy, and he looks up at her quietly and just says, I need. He's fingering her now, and she said that he's fingering her so hard that she can feel him in her belly and that he's eating her out like he's starving, like he's trying to eat her alive. Embry pulled her down on the floor, and she's sitting on his face now, and she comes on Embry's face, all while literally giving Ash still a play by play of what's going on. Ash tells her that he's about to come and he's using one of her silk blouses to jack himself off with. She marries Ash with Embry's bite marks on her thighs, and Ash marries her with his bite marks on Embry's neck. During the reception, Embry comes up to congratulate them. He looks pale and tired, and he tells them he's going to go back to the hotel, that he's not feeling very well. Gur tries to convince him to stay, but he just looks at their rings and congratulates them again and said that he wishes them both all the happiness in the world and turns and walks away.
Poor Embry.
Ash asks her what her safe word is, and she tells him, Maxon. And he tells her that he wants Embry to join them tonight. Since today has been literally perfect, he wants more of it. He wants all three of them to be together. And if today was about the two of them making their vows, then tonight should be about the three of them making their next step together. They leave to go back to the hotel. Abilene texts her, saying to text her when she gets back to the hotel safely so she doesn't have to worry about her. Just like when they went to go visit the Ukrainian president, they didn't tell anyone where they were staying because they rotated like a bunch of hotels around for safety. She texted Abilene back saying that they were staying at the Raphael, and Abilene said that it sounds amazing and that she's so jealous and she hopes that she's enjoying her wedding night.
Go away.
They get back to their room and start making out, and when they hear a knock on the door, and it's Embry. He says, you wanted to see me? And Ash says, yeah, we did. And then he walks up to him and kisses his face.
Oh my gosh.
What a wedding night.
Embry asks what he's doing because he thought that today before the ceremony, when him and Ash kissed and Ash gave him a hickey on his neck after he was with Greer, he thought that was a way of Ash getting Embry out of his system before the wedding ceremony. Ash tells him the last time that Ash asked him to marry him, Ash said that he didn't want him out of his system no matter how many times Embry wanted Ash out of his. Ash confessed that he loves Embry and that he's sorry that he doesn't say it enough. Embry's obviously in pain and tells Ash to stop. Ash just tells him that they all tried to live without each other and it obviously didn't work. Embry said this is fucked up and he doesn't want to be a third wheel for their marriage and that he doesn't want to be kicked out when he outwears his welcome. Greer finally speaks up and she's like, can't you see that we all want this? Just because it's not common doesn't mean that it's wrong. And she can't spend the rest of her life torn between the two of them. It's like ripping her soul in half. They finally find a common ground and come up with set boundaries in their new relationship. The minute it hurts too much, the minute it stops working, they have to be honest about it. But they have to promise each other that they will try to make it work and that they won't run away when things get hard. They will try to love each other the best that they can in all the ways that they can for as long as they can.
It's time for Ash fuck.
Orders they're all gonna Greer, fuck. And it's the first kiss that they've had since Chicago 5 years ago. But Embry kisses her like he's been waiting 1,000. Ash smiles down at her and he asks her what she wants. And she says, I want to see what happens when you two do more than kiss. Instead of kissing Embry, Ash just takes his fingers and like shoves them into Embry's mouth. And then they start making out. Ash starts palming Embry's cock and he's speechless. Greer's over there trying not to rub one out watching them, and homegirl needs a bowl of popcorn with the show. Ash grabs a handful of Embry's hair and yanks him down to his knees while he undoes his pants and pulls out his dick. Embry's mouth obediently opens.
And then he shoves his penis down Embry's throat without warning, without mercy, drawing out only when he feels like it and pushing in as hard and as fast as he likes. Pull yours out, Ash tells Embry. Pull it out and rub it while you suck me. He's so aggressive.
He's the president. He has to be aggressive.
He can't be a gentle lover.
Ash grabs Embry's hair and then stands back up and then wraps his dick and Embry's dick together and starts jacking them off at the same time. Greer's just like watching Embry just make mumbling nonsense into Ash's neck. And Greer's pussy is as tight as a snare drum, hot and needy. Embry is about to come and Ash calls him his little prince. And Greer's like, oh my god, I'm his little princess. I love this. Embry must like it too because he comes painfully loud all over the place and then Ash comes too, and both dicks are still twitching in Ash's hands. It's Greer's turn, and she makes a joke saying, like, I'm nervous. I've never done this before. And Ash says, me neither. But Embry's like, yeah, this is not my first rodeo. They ask what she wants from the two of them, and she says that she wants to have them both at the same time, but she hasn't been fucked in the ass before. They said that since she hasn't been fucked in the ass, they'll need to work up to that, so they'll just have to do one at a time inside of her tonight. She says that she wants one other thing. Since she's a bride tonight, she just wants to feel cherished. They start the scene off by having her crawl to Ash, like she loves doing, and she sits back in her submissive pose. He has Embry undress her and has her spread wide to show Ash her pussy. She's getting hot and bothered and starts wiggling, and Embry tells her to hold still or else Ash is gonna put his cock in her. Ash and Embry are playing like a little investigator scene right now, and Ash walks up to her clit and starts like rubbing it, and he's like, responsive. And then Embry's like, would you like to see if she's wet inside? And then Ash just gives him like an indifferent nod. And I don't know why, I just like laughed out loud because they're being like so nonchalant. Ashley's down and tells Embry to put Greer on top of him and then to put his dick inside of her. Like she's a claw machine. And instead of having Greer move on Ash's dick, he's making Embry move Greer instead.
Okay.
Embry changes the tempo and that's exactly what she needs. And she starts coming and screaming both of their names. They're laying on the bed together after she came and there's kisses, hands, touching everywhere. There's gentle kisses, there's hard kisses, there's bites, there's moans, you name it, it's happening. Time disappears and it becomes nothing, and then there's only them, her husband and his best friend, the president and the vice president. Ash decides that it's time that Embry can fuck Greer. The second that he pushes all 8 inches into her pussy in one thrust, she comes immediately. Ash tells her that he's gonna finger her while Embry is inside of her, and that it's gonna be uncomfortable at first, but they'll go slow. She can hear Embry grunting too, and she knows that Ash is doing something to Embry. At first, it's not so bad, but then he adds two more fingers, and it's definitely uncomfortable. He's adding his last finger now, and she can't even tell what's fingers and what's dick. There's only pressure and pain, and the orgasm that's lurking in the corner. He hits us with a 360 combo and says that it's gonna be tighter when he puts his cock inside of her, but not that much.
So it is skinny.
She knows that no matter how much this is gonna hurt, that she will not use her safe word because she wants this pain, that she'll die without it.
The first part is the hardest part, Embry promises, his mouth moving against my skin. Once the crown is inside, the rest gets easier. Embry is right. Ash presses his cock against Embry's cock and my entrance, and I have a sudden moment of cold fear when I realize this won't be a gentle pushing and sliding of normal sex. Ash is going to have to wedge himself in. Ash is going to have to shove and thrust and punish.
Wait, are they both going in her vagina?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that would hurt.
This is the most painful thing that she's ever experienced, and she feels like she's literally being torn into two. But she surrenders herself to the pain, and she realizes that she's now starting to move on her own, and that it's starting to feel good. She tells the men that she's ready to start fucking.
Ash goes first, pumping his hips experimentally, sliding the length of his cock against the length of Embry's, and I feel every shudder beneath me and mumble something unintelligible. Fuck, that feels so good, Ash grunts, thrusting in again. It's like I'm fucking you and her at the same time. You are, kinda. I feel Embry nod against my neck as if he's as lost in the sensation as I am. He probably is, baby. He probably is.
Both Ash and Embry find their perfect rhythm inside of her pussy, and it's so wet that she thinks that she might have to call housekeeping for new sheets after all this is done.
Ew.
She's shaking because of the sensation of how good it feels, and she's about to come, but they said that she goes first and they'll follow right behind her. They go to shower to wash all of the cum that everyone has on each other off. They fuck more, Ash and Embry together, Greer and Embry together, all three of them together again. Greer wakes up in the middle of the night to her phone buzzing, and it's Abilene. She says that she knows it's the middle of the night, but she needs to talk to her, and she asks if she can come down to the lobby because it's really important. Greer texts back immediately, and she's like, oh my god, are you okay? I'm coming down right now. Abilene says, I'm okay, I just need to see you.
What is this sneaky bitch doing?
She opens the door to the hallway, but she doesn't see Luke or any of the other agents. By the time that she gets to the elevator, and she definitely knows that something's wrong, she's about to turn around when she sees a man standing there wearing a hotel employee uniform and blue latex gloves. His uniform says that his name is Daryl, but she knows that it's not a hotel employee because she's seen him before at the Carpathian diplomatic dinner. She takes a deep breath, preparing to run, and he steps forward with a cold smile. The end.
What? That's the end.
Cliffhanger.
Crazy. So, Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I think I give it 3.5.
Okay.
Like a 3.75.
It was insane.
It is insane, and I agree it's, like, very entertaining, but a little outlandish.
Just for a sure. Little bit. Just a little bit.
Do you think that Ash, I guess, and Embry are sexy?
Kind of Ash, but I think Embry is.
And would you trade places with Greer?
No. Yeah, I don't want any part of, like, the country's government, you know?
Yeah.
Also, it sounded stressful, but she loved it. She ate that shit up.
She did. And next week, we're telling Riley all about The Cock Down the Block by Amy Award. And we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
We have a man holding a rooster with him, like, behind a girl, kind of hugging her. They look like they're in a stadium of some sort. He looks like he's wearing a sport outfit or uniform, I guess. Sport outfit? Maybe like a football player. I think it's going to be kind of like a girl next door type of vibe. You know what I mean? I think she's going to see this boy at their college and they're going to hit it off and they're going to live maybe next to each other. And it's going to be like maybe a sneaky little romance in the beginning. Somehow chickens are involved. I don't know.
Oh.
But I think that's what's going to happen.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. Don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten for early access ad-free episodes. And at the second tier, you have access to a podcast of unfortunate events where Riley and I will be doing a deep dive into a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket.
Woo!
Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye!
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.